Chetan Mabuza. And I would like all of us to introduce ourselves. And Honorable Member next to Ines, can you please introduce yourself?
Good afternoon, colleagues. Good people. My name is Doris Nguyenwa, a member of this portfolio committee from the AAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Sally Wemadlopa, member of Public Works Portfolio Committee.
Goedemiddag, agbare voorzitter en leden. Ik is Noma Themba, Nosake Le Mashi in november, en lid van jullie comité. Dank u.
Good afternoon, honorable members. Kumzile Ngwenya Mabila, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Lennox Keeler, member of this committee.
Good afternoon, Emmanuel Makubane, a member of this committee. Sanbonani, Ikama Uketa Mabalo Rotos, Ilung Rally Committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Maggie Madlala, member of the committee.
Good afternoon, my name is Mpuela Swati, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Anshan Dreyer, member of this committee for the DA.
Thank you, honorable members. Can I allow the DG to introduce herself or introduce introduce DG over to you?
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. Good afternoon. My name is Mandisa Pajela Lindi. I'm the acting DG of Public Works. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, honorable members. my name is Sumo Sehomi, acting CFO, Public Works.
Afternoon, Chair, honorable members. My name is Mfeza Kokwazube, acting Chief Operations Officer, Public Works.
Afternoon, Chair, members. My name is Lord Masao, Monitoring Evaluation Unit.
Good afternoon, everybody, members. My name is Cox Mukoro. I'm from Public Works.
My name is Vuyo Bavuma. I'm from Public Works.
Good afternoon. My name is Mpoma Shaba, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for Public Works.
Are we done? I would like to welcome media advisors that are here and visitors that are here, and also like to welcome the minister and the deputy minister to this meeting. You are welcome. Thank you very much. We are here this afternoon to deal with the Department of Public Works annual report, and without any waste of time, I would like to request the Department of Public Works to get ready with their presentation. Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, we know what we are expecting out of the presentation of the report. We know that it's not a very good report. We know that there are gaps that need to be closed, and we are ready and we accept. And our work is to come and do our oversight and make recommendations where possible. DG, over to you, ma'am. Oh, before the DG. Minister, are you ready?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, to open up the meeting. My apologies. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. The honourable members, Deputy Minister, the acting DG and the officials of the departments, because ladies and gentlemen, in terms of just our input, we would like to raise or address what I would call some of the major shortcomings of this department as revealed by the report. And whilst I will be able just to highlight a few areas and what we're doing in those areas, the DG will be speaking in detail to the report, so we'll make a detailed presentation. Thus mine is just to open. And let me try and address the shortcomings of the department which have been revealed in that annual report, in particular underspending policy and legislation, the provision of the public land for development, and the audit disclaimers. I will also just mention some of the achievements and talk about completed projects and what we're doing to lay the basis of a turnaround strategy. And in particular, talk about the contribution of DPWs to job creation, which is in line with government priorities for 2011-12, which was dubbed by the President the year of job creation. In terms of the challenges, one is underspending. As you are aware, when you browse through that report, there was significant underspending during the financial year 2012-13 in relation to the EPWP incentives to provinces and municipalities. And the figures we're talking about is 357 million. And for the capital projects, we're talking about 425 million. And in relation to the capital projects, underspending was largely due to the poor management and planning. And we have taken the following remedial action in going forward. We have started creating joint teams with the client departments to improve the planning, the coordination, and service. Because we have said to all the major client departments, put a team of technical people, would also come up with a team of technical people who would co-manage this process, so that as a client department, you are informed of each and every step of any project. So we've decided to put those joint teams. We are also introducing the use of the IDPs, which is the Infrastructure Development Improvement Program, a planning and a project management tool which has been adopted by Treasury, and also one of our entities, CIGB, is helping here. So in general, in relation to the projects, the department is greatly hampered by the lack of the technical professionals in the construction field. To be specific, we have identified the need for 220 of such professionals, which are required in the departments in order to manage our obligations in regard to capital projects. We have approached the National Treasury to fund this post as part of the turnaround strategy. not going to be easy, because when you talk about this, you're talking about a lot of people who have been employed in the department instead of the technical professional. And you won't have such budget, because it means adding to the budget of the personnel. But now you must approach the treasurer and talk about shifting certain funds. In fact, one of the complaints is we are also talking about an underspending, but do you spend for the sake of spending, or do you want quality spending? I think that's the question which is confronting us. And to deal with these appointments, it's not a matter of a week or a month or 2 months. The process on its own becomes a very complex process. Even to shift the budgets, you have to follow particular routes. So we have started engaging with the Treasury in relation to that. And in relation to the EPWP incentives, underspending was largely due to the low take-up. The low take-up rate by municipalities and failure to report adequately, a condition for accessing the incentive grants. So to ensure that improved drawdown of the incentives in the future, the incentive grant model has been revised. And that revised model aims to ensure that rural municipalities have easier access to incentive grants in order to increase labor-intensive work opportunities through those projects of the EPWP. So increased support has also been provided to assist with accurate reporting. On policy and legislation, order. No, it's because it's screaming because Honorable Dreyer is looking at me on what I'm saying everywhere. my apologies, Chairperson and their members. On policy and legislation, DPW is mandated to regulate and promote growth and transformation in the construction and property sector. And in the annual report, you can see it's pointing to the non-delivery on a number of crucial policy and legislative fronts. So the Portfolio Committee, in its engagement with the Department, has rightly expressed previously a number of frustrations with the Department in relation to these areas. And I think we take the criticism very seriously. And in mitigation, let me indicate, Chairperson, the steps we have taken to rectify this. We've agreed with the Deputy Minister. It's no more I now. We have agreed with the Deputy Minister, Deputy Minister Cronin, that one of his priorities now is to drive the policy and legislative agenda, the focus area for him. And he has to assess everybody in that particular branch, because we have also been disappointed in that branch by our own officials. We are assessing everybody. We have also charged the CIDB to coordinate with the CBE, the Council for Built Environment, with Agrima SA and the Department for the purposes of facilitating a summit on the transformation of the built environment. That summit is at the end of November, with the express purpose of developing concrete measures to enhance and to expedite empowerment and to update and refresh the vision for the transformation of the built environment. Specific commitments in the current financial year to deal with those weaknesses. We're finalizing the immovable, the asset life cycle management guidelines. Finalize the review of the built environment profession legislation. The draft bill for the submission to the cabinet review of the expropriation of 1975, we assist with that. Very soon we will be tabling it that year, I guess, that year. We are finalizing the business case for the Agrima SA. On the third area, the provision of the public land for social development. And I want to be upfront that the department here failed to meet the 2011-12 target of 2,000 hectares to be transferred for housing. In fact, the actual figure was a mere 1.6 hectares approved. And I should point out that requests for land transfers from the Department of Human Settlement during this period we're talking about, 11-12, amounted to 1,031 hectares. And of this, 926 hectares is in the process of being finalized for transfer. But we must indicate that the reasons for delays, honorable members, include the need to provide developmental plans and to comply with existing land use management laws and municipality bylaws. And DPW is required to exercise caution to ensure that national land which is sold or donated is actually used for the intended purposes as per the request. If not, such land must revert back to the state. We've had cases where we donate land, we shop municipality has sold that land to the private, or people request the land from national when they have the extra land which they can use, just because they do not want to touch their land. They want only to access the land which is national. The area which I must also highlight is the audit disclaimers. An audit disclaimer for the second year. Honorable Chairperson, in my budget vote speech in May this year, I informed members that it's too little, too late. It had been done to any meaningful impact on the audit for 2011-12. It was very clear to me, after doing a diagnostic, left with 3 months to the end of the financial year, I knew that whatever intervention I was doing, it was too little and too late. Given deeply rooted systemic issues in that particular department, turning it around even on the finances was not going to be an event. It's going to be a process, and it's still going to take us time. So indeed, the first members of my turnaround team only came on board in March, right at the end of the financial year. With the work which they've done in the last 2 months, the turnaround team is confident that we will lose the disclaimers for the current financial year 2012-2013. But while the department will be striving for a clean audit, the turnaround team cautions that there are certain deep systemic flaws which will persist for some time. Principally, I need to mention the completion, for instance, of the vesting process to finalize the immovable asset register requires massive and complex coordination across all levels of government. You can do it at the national level, but you need to have a process linking to the provincial levels, also a process linking to the local sphere, particularly with the provinces as well as even with other departments. Principally, Department of Rural Development and Land Reform is very key here, and with the deeds register. On our own, we're not going to be able to do it. We'll just be dreaming. So it means systems must be proper at all those particular levels. So the process is underway, but it needs to be accelerated. Thank you, ma'am. In regards to the property management trading entity, as another example, incorrect accounting treatment applied in preparing the financial statements is being addressed. However, Chairperson, the department still has to finalize the business case, the organogram, and the structure of the PMTE. There are big debates about the future of the PMT and how it should be structured. There are very big debates, and more so that you are talking about 3 billion business. You are talking about something which is 7 times bigger than the property portfolio company in the country. but and that is just run at the level of a chief director. And if you look at that property, who's running it in the private sector when you have such a massive thing? So there's a big debate about what should be the direction of this and what skills do you need at that particular level. This requires that we work with the National Treasury and DPSA for their approval in this regard. Operationalizing the PMTE will inevitably involve teething problems. So the following remedial actions to address audit findings have already been implemented. The project to develop a comprehensive and a reliable immovable register is well underway. The first major milestone was passed in May this year with the completion of the desktop exercise, which was meant to reconcile DPW records with the deeds office. The audit of the leases is underway. We continue to deal with that, and we continue to expose individuals involved in irregular activities, and we continue to take them to the necessary processes. A review to enhance SCM processes is underway. A financial statement, or at a financial statement level, a number of technical enhancements have been done in relation, including related party disclosures and quantification framework developed, contingent liability and contingent asset identified. An audit action plan has been developed to resolve all audit findings and has been submitted to the National Treasury. At the most basic level, this includes ensuring that there's proper documentation which is maintained to allow auditing to take place. An action plan committee has been established to monitor implementation, which meets bi-weekly. The AG's team has been invited to attend as they deem fit. Internal audit has also been tasked to follow up on progress reported against the action plan. Meanwhile, Chairperson, the department turnaround team is working closely with the AG's office to address the audit issues. They are meeting on a regular basis in this respect. The AG staff has already conducted two-day workshops with directors and chief directors of the department to unpack the audit findings and spell out the remedial measures which are necessary. We also should also mention, Chair, that we're working closely with DPSA, who are assisting us to modify the performance agreements of senior staff. The problem is that in some instances, when you look at the previous performance agreements or which are there, even if you want to nail the people, but if your performance agreements are not tight, it's very, very difficult. Now, we are reviewing those performance agreements, especially at the top level, in line with the measures needed to address the audit findings, in a way, focusing individual performance measurement on the implementation of these remedial areas. On the achievements and maybe completed projects, despite the negative reporting of mismanagement and corruption, but what is good is it's us who are exposing that. We should not lose sight of the fact that within the department there remain pockets of excellence, and most officials are committed to service delivery. And it gives hope, because during the same year under review we're talking about, our department has completed 237 capital projects. This includes a number of key projects for subs. One of them is the forensic lab in Baru, the correctional facilities in Kimberley and Branfley, the extensive renovations to the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein, magistrate buildings and Department of Justice, the upgrading of the Myron Highlands and so on. But we must state one of the problems facing this department is the inflating or overcharging by the providers. That's a very, very serious problem. Where something started 50 million, the variation orders, it ends at 200 million, to the extent that figures on any project of this department are not reliable figures. And part of the problem is when you use clerks to evaluate a project from an engineering company, you're not going to get the quality which you want. That's the problem which is facing. That is why we insist that if you want quality spending, the issue of the 220 technical professionals is very key. Unless you have those people, you're not going to be able to have the quality spend who are going to interrogate any submission from a service provider and who are having equally the technical skill to submit that. Because it's not just about looking at the papers. It is about interrogating technically that particular proposal or that particular submission. On the turnaround, Chairperson, I just want to say the strategy for the department was developed in the last quarter of the financial year 2011-2012. And we have said that that turnaround strategy rests on two pillars: fighting corruption and improving the business model and the performance of the department. And let me just say, in relation to the anti-corruption measures, we have reported at length to the portfolio committee. But also, just to recap, SIU has carried out a forensic audit of the selected listings leading to some disciplinary action on some of the officials. We have dismissed one or two. On others, we're waiting the outcome of the chairpersons of the disciplinary committees and so on, right? I reported that. But the latest information we can give you is that 8 cases have been opened on criminal proceedings in Amdad. In fact, we've given that to the prosecuting authorities, sitting with 8 cases in Amtata, and we have to deal and discipline people, and we have to deal with criminal issues, but those belong to the other state, what you call agencies, not to us. So we're not just dealing with the headquarters, we're also dealing with the regions. So as these things are coming out, and they come from the previous financial years, not just even 11-12, they come even other previous years. So we continue to deal with them. So I should mention, Chairperson, that as part of the turnaround process, we're strengthening the internal audit to detect the wrongdoing and also putting in place a team to oversee disciplinary processes going forward. It's clear that when you have to deal with those issues, you have to put a team to deal with this. This increased capacity becomes critical as department extends its investigation beyond leases to include projects and procurement. It's not just on leases. So we're looking at every. So in relation then to improving the business model and the performance of the department, we've followed the following tentative steps, or these have been taken. Already mentioned that the effort towards the improved client service through client-centered joint teams, working closely with the TPSA, we are developing a thorough organizational functional analysis of the organogram to motivate the treasurer for extra personnel. We are aligning the annual performance plan and individual performance agreements to the remedial requirements arising out of the AG's report. We are talking about the development of the service delivery improvement plans. This cooperation we've started with the DPSA and Treasury includes part-time secondment of senior DPSA officers to assist with the performance management and HR issues. HR issues in the department are so chaotic. Very, very chaotic. And I want to emphasize this. It's not true that we're just relying on people outside the government. or consultants. In fact, we have close to 7-8 seconded people in the department coming from departments and entities of DPW. It's only in certain areas where we'll not be able to get that we go out and talk about the big audit firm. But generally, we're using the skills from the other departments. And where we lack skills, then we will resource these skills. But we will carefully manage the relationship with the clear intention of ultimately building capacity in-house. And I also need to mention, I'm moving towards finishing, Mr. President. I need to mention the sterling work undertaken by members of this department in regards to the Limpopo rescue effort, where Cabinet requested us to assist in December last year. At the time, I had already likened the DPW to a patient in the intensive care unit. The request to assist in Limpopo conjured up the image of one ICU patient now caring for a fellow patient. That's what I said. In fact, the findings of the interministerial committee, which reported earlier this year, showed that as the national DPW, we were facing many of the same challenges as in the provincial departments, requiring similar interventions, hence the turnaround strategy. But on a lighter note, Chair, I must say, if I were to persist with my earlier metaphor, I would have to say that the DPW is now out of the ICU. The patient has been stabilized and we are currently assembling a team to perform the reconstructive surgery. Unfortunately, we can't afford a time for a long convalescence. However, long-term therapy seems advisable. We accept that. On the last area, the EPW, honorable members, it has been a rough week, so allow me to conclude on a positive note. And I'm proud to say that EPWP, the flagship program of the department and government, achieved 97% of the work opportunities target for 2012, creating the figures 843,459 work opportunities. And of course, this places the country well on track to achieve that target we had put of 4.5 million work opportunities and not full-time jobs. We must emphasize that, which need to be created in the next 5 years of this administration. And 60% of the EPW participants were women and 50% the youth. But we think that in the EPWP, more can still be done. And with the Deputy Minister, which is one of his focus areas, we're looking at how we have to massively increase that area. Since the EPWP Municipality Summit held November last year, the EPWP District Steering Committees have been increased and strengthened, and protocol agreements have been signed with 99% of municipalities to commit them to specific targets. I should also mention that alerted by the findings arising out of the visits carried out by the committee, because we're very alive of your criticism. EPWP has now upgraded its reporting systems to combat false reporting, because people can report what is not there. And when you go into the program, you find that it's not there. So we are very alive to that. Of course, EPWP is more than simple targets and statistics. It's about mitigating poverty and the effects of unemployment. So it seeks to give hope to those through no fault of their own have been marginalized by the unfeeling economic processes. Allow me, Chairperson, just to recount some of the personal experiences of some beneficiaries. One said the monthly stipend that I've received from EPWP as a project manager has been very helpful. Besides helping my family financially, I've been able to save money to study further. This was a person who was a dropout. And one said, I was very happy when we got our bank cards from FNB with the help of EPWP. The stipend made me sure that I could care. I could take care of my child. And one beneficiary said, I'm happy that I'm working for something that will sustain all of us. We are removing island plants and the roots so that we can farm our own fields. We have been working on this land for 2 years and we are looking forward to fencing the fields in preparation for planting. Honorable members, just to close, consider for a moment some of the spin-offs which have been clearly indicated by the beneficiaries. If we're to massify this program, we think that we can go far in restoring the dignity of the work and providing for family members, making it possible for some people to re-enter the world of education and training, and promoting that sustainable rural economic development. It's clear that EPWP works because of that coordinated and joint efforts and the different levels of government and the different departments, and as well as the NGOs and the faith-based organizations. And that to me reminds us again, in the words of the President, that working together we can achieve more. That's how I introduce to the report. I can hand over to the teacher. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Without any waste of time, DG, can you come up with your presentation and then we'll engage at the end of the DG's presentation. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, let me go through the 2011-2012 Public Works Annual Report. And maybe quickly upfront state the purpose of the report. Is to reflect on the challenges and achievements for the year under review, but also to bring to the attention of the committee that as public works we have not escaped our responsibility of ensuring that we pay attention to, amongst other things, job creation, as stated clearly by the President in the State of the Nation address, and also to respond to the requirements of the committee or the directives of the committee and present those achievements and challenges reflected in the annual report. Chairperson, Public Works plays a critical role in terms of outcome 4. While this outcome is owned by the Minister of Economic Development, but as you know, that government is run through clusters, and the economic and employment cluster is responsible for reporting against outcome 4. We are represented in that cluster mainly by the EPWP, which has to respond to some of the requirements contained in the cluster program of action and to align or to ensure that some of the programs implemented by the Department of Economic Development, like the installation of solar panels, etc., the EPWP does get targets. Chairperson and honorable members, you know that in the department we have Operation Rea Batala. This is to respond to the commitments made by the country to honor the 30-day turnaround time to pay suppliers. Due to many challenges also that are encountered during the facilitation of the operation, we encountering just a few constraints in terms of we can't pay if a service provider has not attached all the required documentation. We're also trying to ensure that contractors who are not paid on time or other service providers, they actually understand that we have Operation Rea Batala, but they also know where to go to ensure that their invoices are processed. In terms of the programs, Chairperson, if you look at the screen, we have just presented all the government outcomes. Public Works is a cross-cutting department. Does not necessarily own a particular outcome, but has to respond to most of the government outcomes. We have about four in our strategic plan. But as a provider of accommodation of government, we have to make sure, for example, we respond to outcome one, although it's owned by the Department of Education and the relevant cluster. As you know that we have been delivering schools using our implementing agent, the IDT, to assist the Department of Basic Education, Chairperson. If you look at the others, when we deliver police stations, we are responding to the outcome that deals with a safe South Africa. And if we don't deliver those police stations on time, it means therefore that we are working against that outcome, and that's important to note. The minister alluded to the hectares that have been released to respond to the building program for low-income housing. When we do that, Chairperson, we are responding to outcome number 8, to assist the Minister of Human Settlement to reach his target. I won't go through all the outcomes, but I was just trying to demonstrate how we interpret some of these outcomes. Three of those outcomes are in our Minister's agreement together with the President. Chairperson, let me just go through Program 2. This is the biggest program in the department, together with Program 3, which is the EPWP. Program 2 has a number of sub-programs, and issues related to the asset register, the delivery of infrastructure are located in this, under this program. We have, through our Human Capital Investment Program, appointed about 21 graduates, Chairperson, to enhance the immovable asset register. As you know that we have appointed Ernst & Young to assist us with the enhancement of the immovable asset register. The challenges are related to that, Chairperson. The one that I would like to flag out relates to the issue of systems, the outdated systems, the property management, excuse the grammatical error there, the property management information system, and the works control system. Continuing on the asset register management, We have, through the we have confirmed ownership of land parcels under the correctly of government, at least those that fall within our scope of responsibility, to ensure that we respond to the social objectives of government. The challenge chaplain, which has been attended to but could not be taken into consideration under the current audit but will reflect positively in the next audit, is the issue of unsurveyed land. May I state categorically that the Chief Surveyor General has assured us that all unsurveyed land parcels have actually been surveyed. The importance of noting that, honorable members, is key because that data from rural development under the custodianship of the Chief Surveyor General will be transferred to Public Works to ensure that it contributes to the enhancement of the asset register. The next issue, if you look under challenges there, it will be the lack of documentation to validate ownership as from the 27th of April 1994. That also is being attended to through the project now under the Chief Surveyor General. What the Chief Surveyor General has done, honorable members, is busy with the audit of land in the entire republic. He's well advanced in terms of that. He knows who owns what, but what he's busy with now is a verification process of the data he has captured. I think that will be very helpful also in terms of the vesting process, which is one of the key headaches when we speak of the property rates and taxes and the challenges we are experiencing with the payment thereof. But also, it will confirm the ownership status of land in the country and probably put paid to many questions of who owns what in the republic. Chairperson, the next slide just speaks to the overall assessment of that project. And we confirm here that we have the support of Ernst & Young to actually assist us to have a relatively dignified understanding of the immovable asset register by 31st March 2014. And also, we are busy now with the appointment process of a service provider to conduct physical verification. In the previous year, we had to focus on the development of the terms of reference, but now that process currently as we speak is being attended. As I've said before, we work very close with the Department of Rural and Land Reform and provinces to fast track the process of item 28 certificates. Investment analysis. Honorable members, the custodian asset management plan is very key in terms of the planning and budgeting cycle of government. Public Works has a draft. We're saying that has a draft because although it is completed, the document, but the document can never be completed 100%, even if from our side we say it is completed, if it's not comprehensively informed by the user asset management plans of our client department. I'm referring there to the contribution as stated in the slide. This speaks to issues of condition assessment and performance assessment as required by the government's Immovable Asset Management Act. What we have communicated currently, Chairperson and honorable members, to Treasury. Treasury must not provide budgets to departments outside the user asset management plan. Because once you do that, you allow departments to commit budgets to projects that probably have not been planned properly. Now I move to rehabilitated buildings. We have a program called rehabilitation, which we have implemented. On your left, you will see all the indicators, but in the interest of time, Chairperson, I'm not necessarily reading from that. But what's important for us to note under this rehabilitation program is the fact that there's a policy decision that has been taken by the department to move our government departments from leased buildings to state-owned buildings. The commitment is still there to reduce our private lease portfolio. Chairperson, as a part of our constitutional obligations, we have a program in the department called the Accessibility Program, where we rehabilitate or remodel buildings to ensure that they can be accessed by people who are disabled. The challenge is related to this program, not exclusively to it, but also to other programs or projects, is the issue of grading of hire contractors and the responsiveness of especially small contractors to be part of that program. The next one will speak to outcome 8 of the release of land, which the minister alluded to in his presentation. And the challenge is Public Works has not been proactively engaging stakeholders to ensure that the memorandum of understanding are signed on time and also to fast track the entire process of land transfer. This is what has happened in the previous year that we are trying to correct this year. Chairperson, this slide speaks about Giyama and the issues that I have alluded to before. Key account management is the front desk of our department. It is your face. It is those people that you speak to when you want a building to Public Works. It is a branch. They are responsible for developing the Capital Works Implementation Program and also ensure that working with the other stakeholders within the department, that the Capital Works Implementation Program of our clients is properly managed and communicated. There are challenges when it comes to the achievement of that particular responsibility. And I have alluded to that before by saying the issue of user asset management plans has to be taken care of seriously, and Treasury has to use those UMs, we call them UMs, when they allocate budgets to client departments. We also have the planned maintenance implementation program, which also involves a lot of interaction between us and our clients. We have not done effectively well in terms of that, and that is receiving the attention of the turnaround program, and also to ensure that the department does facilitate and accelerate the issue of service level agreements with our client departments. Chairperson, I'm just going to continue focusing on the challenges under the key account management. Members can read the other issues raised there. But what I need to re-emphasize is the issue of ensuring that government departments, not only Public Works, have the capacity and the capability to implement Giyama, as Giyama is like our Public Finance Management Act, if you were to compare its significance to that. But also what we are emphasizing here is the importance of those UMs and also the compliance with Giyama projects and professional services. This is the function in the department that has to ensure that we deliver projects, we have the technical capacity to deliver those projects, we plan together with clients. As you know, Chairperson and Honorable Members, the Inner City Regeneration Program has been one of the key programs in the department, which has, amongst others, focused on the redevelopment of Salvocop, focusing mainly on the fencing project. And that fencing project is aimed at introducing control access measures into Salvocop and also managing the issue of illegal dumping of construction waste on government land. The challenge is with respect to Salvocop. Salvocop is quite a huge territory lying on some top of the hill in Pretoria. Is the prolonged conclusion of the town planning guidelines, which has also had an impact on bus infrastructure planning and development of the site. The next slide speaks to the 237 projects that the minister alluded to before, that were finished in the year under review. And as stated there, during this current fiscal year, we continue with 660 projects. The overall expenditure, in as much as we have underspent, but for some projects we actually do spend. We have spent 66% on DPW capital, and DPW maintenance 89%, and clients capital 77%. I just want to remind the committee that you would recall that in terms of the capital budget, we have two streams mainly. It is public works capital budget and the client's capital budget. The client capital budget will speak to things like building police stations for subs or correctional facilities for correctional services. But our own breakdown of the capital budget, you'll find it in Table 3 of the strategic plan, Honorable Members. All the programs we spend the public works capital are listed there. It will be the Dolomite, it will be special projects, it will be the rehabilitation program, etc., etc. The challenges around this program would speak to fewer projects or fewer awarding of projects, which really impacted on the spending of the budget. Under DPW capital, the total amount of 238,584,894 was not allocated to any project, and efforts to utilize the funds to purchase land and buildings or purchase capital equipment for workshops was also unsuccessful. Remember that, Honorable Members, we have made a commitment to reopen public works workshops, and during the year under review here, that did not happen and therefore also impacted on the spend. The projects that are listed here, Chairperson, the Minister did mention them, so I won't repeat them, except to say that, to single out the commissioning and printing of the web machines for the government printing warehouse, as we work very closely with the government printing as one of our clients. Expanded public works program. 97% of the work opportunities have been realized. And if you translate that to full-time equivalent, it will translate to 69%. And as I alluded to before, we are addressing outcome 4. Challenges is the whole issue of reporting, because we have to coordinate reports from the other two spheres of government and not only national departments. And therefore, during the year under review, 296 projects were excluded due to poor data quality after they were subjected to validation procedures. But there's also a reality that we have established, honorable members, the lack of capacity in some of these public bodies to implement or even plan projects in a labor, using the labor-intensive methodology. Public Works has been to municipalities, and Public Works has also, in the previous years, including this year, used the services of the International Labor Organization, who are providing technical support, working with us, to municipalities. So in as much as there is lack of capacity in those public bodies, we're trying our best to provide that support, but everything is contingent on the optimal functioning of local government. Because even if you send your best tech team to local government or to any municipality, if when you withdraw, there's still no capacity to be able to implement those labor-intensive programs, it still does defeat the purpose. But there's also the issue of reporting, which we have identified in terms of poor reporting and under-reporting by the public body. So all those issues are really related to capacity of those in some of the municipalities. We have also exceeded or paid attention to the empowerment of women and the youth, and also we're trying our best to incorporate people with who are disabled into the EPWP program. The issue of incentive grants, honorable members, in terms of this indicator, 63% of the integrated incentive for the infrastructure and environment and culture sectors has been dispersed. And also 100% of the social sector incentive grant for provinces has been dispersed or was dispersed. This means that 69% of the wage incentive was dispersed across the infrastructure, social and environment and culture sectors. The disbursement of that incentive is also dependent on the public bodies being able to meet their annual thresholds and also to report their data properly. We are also, as a department, addressing the issues that were raised at the summit, and we have established an EPWP district steering committee, and also are assisting in the development of EPWP municipal policies. But we are also proud to announce, honorable members, that 271 municipalities have signed protocol agreements. To ensure that we improve on the drawdown of the incentive grants, honorable members would remember that we have chosen to revise the model and also pay 40% of that grant upfront and 60% in two tranches, which will be paid once the public body has shown that they have actually been able to implement the projects in a labor-intensive way. The construction and property policy function of the department. This is the custodian of the Act, and we have been able, as a department, to provide guidelines that will guide, or guidelines for Guyana. But the challenges around this function, there needs to be further deepening of engagement before the guidelines can be approved. The built environment, the review of the built environment, profession bill, the built environment profession bill, will ensure that there is synergy focused on the growth and development while contributing to government development objectives. The challenges related to this function is linked to the delays that we as a department have experienced when it comes to options analysis. The new Expropriation Act is receiving our attention, but has been rolled over also and not adequately addressing the previous year, given the challenges that we have experienced with that bill. You would recall that there was a draft bill that was about to serve before Parliament almost 2 years ago that was withdrawn, and the expropriation bill is largely done and will serve before Parliament, at least this current fiscal year. The business case of Acrimo South Africa will also was not finalized in the previous year and is receiving our priority attention this year. This slide reports to those things that have been rolled over, which are receiving our attention in year 2012 and 2013, which includes the expropriation bill and the Acrimo business case. Chairperson and honorable members, I'll now hand over to the acting CFO to come and do the financials.
Thank you, DG. CFO, over to you.
Yeah. In terms of financial performance report, when it comes to the annual report of 2011-12, the program one administration, the budget is 819 million, the expenditure is 837 million, the expenditure percentage of is 102%. Compared with the previous financial year 2010-11, the budget is 679 million, the expenditure is 679 million, the expenditure is 100%. And the program two, immovable assets management, the budget for the 2011-12 is 5.4 billion. The expenditure is 5 billion, and the expenditure ratio is 92%. The budget for 2010-11 is 5.2 billion. The expenditure is 4.9 billion, and the expenditure percentage is 96%. When it comes to Program 3, EPWP, the budget under 2011-12 is 1.5 billion. The expenditure is 1.1 billion. The percentage expenditure ratio is 76%. Then the budget for 2010-11 is 1.4 billion. The expenditure is.
My apology, CFO. Can you not get deep
okay.
into?
Okay. Okay, let me just to go into the subtotal. When it comes to the budget for the 2011-12, the subtotal is 7.8 billion. The expenditure is 7 billion, and then the ratio of the expenditure is 90%. Compared with the previous financial year 2010-11, the budget is 7.3 billion. The expenditure is 6.6 billion. The expenditure trend is 90%. Okay, now we come down to look at it for economic classification. When it comes to the total, when it comes to the final budget allocation, the total is 7.8 billion. The expenditure is 7 billion. The percentage spent is 90%. The variance is 768 million. The, compared with the previous financial year of 2010-11, the total budget of final allocation is 7.3 billion. The expenditure is 6.6 billion, and the percentage of spending is 90%. We come down to the analysis of over expenditure. The compensation of employees, expenditures is 1.2 billion, which amounting to 101%. And this is because of overspending the both program and program 1 and 2, and it consists of 17 million. So if over expenditure is classified as unauthorized expenditure, when it comes to goods and services, expenditure is 1 billion. The expenditure equipment to the 100%. The program 2 had overspending of 4 million on goods and services due to the energy efficiency project where the funding allocation was not sufficient to cover the commitment. And the overspending is because the commitment made in previous years to the ITT, and then when there was a law order that was not approved by the National Treasury, and also the project because it's continuing and that give rise to the over expenditure. And this is classified as unauthorized expenditure. Now we come to the transfer and subsidy. The transfer subsidy ending at 3.6 billion, equivalent to 91%, and other spending is 357 million, and that is due to the EPWP incentive to the provinces, municipalities, and the program for regarding over expenditure on transfer subsidy. It's also the overspending that was classified as unauthorized expenditure. When it comes to the capital and infrastructure, expenditure for infrastructure is 1 billion. Expenditure equivalent to 70% of allocation. The underspending of infrastructure equivalent to 425 million. The unexpenditure on payment on capital assets relating to infrastructure that was budgeted for 425 million non-spending at the end of financial year. In terms of items of machinery equipment, the spending is 87 million. The expenditure is equivalent to 96%. The underspending is equal to 3.9 million. When we come down to the reason on expenditure, which is alluded to, there's a policy instruction for National Treasury, which is disrupted for about 3 months of to get a concurrence to advertise. There's also issue about the alignment issue between the planning and registering the project, and which is right to the ideal situation not being able to complete in time. The third is dealing with the program approval, the issue about us wanting to focus on workshop water operation programs, polyculture programs, at the port of entry that was not allocated funds. The fourth one is low spending or allocation of ITT affecting the transfer of funds, and also the late issue of procurement instruction, in particular when it comes to accessibility program. And the very one is the instability of the leadership at the project level at the regional offices, where you find they're changing of head when it comes to the project position not being filled, and also due to the some of the lower classification of the post and the strict criteria of OSD. When we look at the environment, we need to look at it is that when it comes to the program one, there's an increase of 41 million from program two and three to offset the over expenditure on goods and services and the payments for capital assets. When it comes to program two, there was increase of 16 million to offset the current payment of compensation employees and goods and services. The amount is 16 million is the net offset of the 51 million environment. And this environment is coming from the program three, and also there's another 23 million coming from program one and three for machinery equipment. And the environment also includes amount of 15 million approved by Treasury to move funds for payment from capital assets to goods and services. And the province will buy land will reduce by 54 million to offset the goods and services. When it comes to program 4, whether they reduce by 2.7 million for the compensation employees to program 2. The program 5 was reduced by 215,000 to offset the overspending on goods and services program 2. The reason for disclaimer for opinion at the public work site is the issue about the immovable assets, where the immovable assets still under the reconstruction, and also we could not verify the completeness, validity, and accuracy of the immovable assets register. When it comes to receivable for departmental revenue, the lease of property still currently rented could not be reconciled with the department's immovable assets register. Therefore, cannot be verified in terms of its completeness. The issue of lease commitment, operating lease revenue, the supporting revenue compiled from PMIS's inability to supply the actual lease agreements in all instances, therefore resulting in limitation of scope. When there's a lease agreement which is provided, the audit testing review that says an honest statement of the commitment, and also absence of complete and accurate immovable assets register and unable to confirm the completeness. And operating leases which cannot be supply sufficient appropriate audit evidence to substantiate operating lease expenditure paid to PMTE. Now the next thing, when it comes to irregular expenditure, the department is not having an adequate system to identify and recognize all the irregular expenditure, and also the ability to supply documents for unsuccessful bidders for awards. The next issue dealing with the fruitless waste for expenditure, the department did not have an adequate system to identify and recognizing all fruitless waste for expenditure. When it comes to commitment, the department could not substantiate contract price adjustment provision amounting to 128 million. The related party disclosure, the departments are able to supply sufficient appropriate audit evidence in support of assumption used to determine indirect costs incurred on behalf of the PMTE. The issue about the compliance in terms of other legal and regulatory requirements, when it comes to any financial statement, performance, and any report, the financial statements submitted for audit was not prepared in according to the subscribed financial reporting framework and supported by full proper records. A material misstatement identified by the auditors in the submitted financial statement was subsequently corrected. Under the asset management, proper control system to safeguard and maintain assets were not implemented applicable to immovable assets. In the area of budget, the budget for compensation with employee was exceeded, and the transfer that was not original budget for what was made without approval of national treasury. In the area of human resources management, appointment was made in a post that was not funded, and the funded post was not in Eastern Field within 12 months. The person in charge at pay points didn't always certify the employees receiving payment were therefore entitled to. Also, the organizational structures were not in all instances aligned to the department's strategic plan. In the area of revenue management, the accounting office did not take effective appropriate steps to collect all money due, and also immovable state property was sold at a below market related value. Thirdly, insufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained that immovable state property was left at a market-related tariff. In the area of procurement and contract management, goods and services with a transaction value below 500,000 was procured without obtaining the required price quotation. Goods and services of a transaction value above 500 were procured without inviting competitive bids. Deviation was approved by the accounting office, and even though it was not impractical to invite competitive bids. The third one, contracts were awarded to bidders who did not submit a declaration of past supply chain management practices. And then the area in the employees of department performed remunerated work outside the employment in the department without written permission from relevant authority. And the last issue is the allegation of fraud, corruption, improper conduct, and failure to comply with supply chain management system laid against officials and role players in the supply chain management system were not in instance investigated. And now it's continued. Appropriate action was not always taken against official and role play in the supply chain management system where investigation by fraud and corruption and improper conduct and failure to comply with supply chain management system. Another point is that person in service of department whose close family members, partner, and associate has a private business interest in contract awarded by the department failed to disclose such interest. In addition, the accounting office did not in all instances report within 10 working days to the Auditor General all cases for goods and services above the value of $1 million and has been procured through the National Trade Regulation. Another point is a sufficient, appropriate audit evidence did not obtain that all contracts and quotations were awarded according with legislative requirements. That the entity did not implement proper record keeping in a timely manner to ensure that complete, relevant, and accurate information was accessible and available to evaluate compliance. Another point is that sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained that a contract and quotation were awarded to supplier whose tax matter has been declared by the SARS. When it comes to the area of strategic planning, the county office did not ensure that the department has maintained an effective, efficient, transparent system of internal control regarding performance management, which described and represented how the department processes of performance planning, monitoring, measurement, review, and reporting were conducted, organized, and managed. The accounting office of the Department of Public Works did not finalize or approve the business case for running the trading entity and subsequently did not formulate a policy and reporting framework for the head of the trading entity. The thirdly, banking and financial and cash management. The fourthly, the entity main bank account has overdrawn throughout the reporting period in contravention with the relevant treasury regulation. Now, when it comes to PMT statement of financial position, when it comes to the total assets under 2012 is 4.1 billion, 2011 is 3.9 billion, 2010 is 3.2 billion. When it comes to the total accumulated funds and liability, 2012 is 4.1 billion, 2011 is 3.9 billion, the 2012 is 3.2 billion. When it comes to the statement of comprehensive income, the totals come to the 6.8 billion negative, and then when it comes to 2011, it's minus 4.8 billion. The financing cost is 541,000, and then the 2011 is 1.7. The profit for the year in 2012 is 277 million, and then when it comes to the 2011, is 188. When it comes to the revenue, the income collected under the immovable property which is disclosed under the statement of public works is 2.5 billion and in the 2011 is 1 billion. When it comes to the trade and the other receivables, the total less than 1 year is 3.3 billion and 1 to 3 years the total is 571 million. And the total added up to 3.8 billion. The basis for disclaimer for the PNTE, number one is irregular expenditure because of no adequate system to identify and recognize all irregular expenditure. The second is a fruitless and wasteful expenditure due to the no adequate system to identify and recognize all fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The third is under the trade and other receivable. The issue about reconstruction and regulation of the receivable in the area of claims recoverable pays, claims recoverable CA, compensation debtors under the private leases, the debtors' municipal services, and also the ability to supply all the evidence in supporting all recorded transactions did not raise receivable for service rendered prior to the year end. Impairment did not done on an individual basis according to SA GAAP. The lack of audit evidence supporting stable that amortization of debtors are immaterial. Under the IAS 17, we require that the lease income from income to lease shall be recognized in income on a straight line basis over the lease term, and that calculation was performed. The next thing we need to look at is the issue about the prepayment. That one is that because department based on estimate, which is not allowed, when it comes to the revenue, plant maintenance erroneously being offset against the revenue. When it comes to trade and other payable, insufficient evidence in supporting amount recorded in the bank's account, also lack of all the evidence supporting statement that affect the amortization is immaterial, and inability to confirm completeness and accrual, and also lack of evidence for accrual rate. The straight line lease performing incorrectly, thus unable to verify fair presentation of lease creditors. And when it comes to lease rental and operating lease, inability to provide sufficient appropriate audit evidence, and also incorrect allocation refurbishment cost to lease expenditures. But when it comes to the municipal rates and taxes, the issue about lack of evidence to support municipal rates and taxes payments, inability to reconcile between IEWorks and PMIS, and when it comes to other commitments, the entity could not provide appropriate audit evidence to support commitment to an S value of 1.7 billion. Commitment also overstated for an amount of 173 million due to errors. In the area of operating this commitment, inability to obtain sufficient or appropriate audit evidence in supporting operating lease commitment. Also, the calculation of operating lease commitment was based on straight line lease payment instead of taking the minimum lease payment into account as per requirement. In the issue of contingent assess, lack of evidence and a probability assessment, and when it comes to the area related parties, inability to conclude unfair presentation due to matters reported under trade and other receivable, the entity was unable to supply sufficient appropriate all the evidence in support of assumptions used. Under the expenditure payment, effective step was not taken to prevent irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditures. Effective appropriate discipline steps were not in instance taken against officials, and also account office did not ensure that effective internal control were in place for payment approved and processing. When it's matter of financial misconduct, investigation has not been conducted into all allegations of financial misconduct committed by official. Investigation into allegation of financial misconduct against official were not in all instances instituted within 30 days of discovery. And the 30-day hearing was not in all instances held for financial misconduct committed by the officials. In the matter of revenue management, the account office did not develop and implement appropriate process that provides for the identification, collection, and recording and reconciliation and safeguarding of the information about the revenues to ensure that all money owed to the trading entity was collected. Secondly, the account officer did not take effect appropriate steps to collect all money due. Thirdly, sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained that the interest was charged on debt. The last issue dealing with the banking and the cash management, the entity main banking account was overdrawn throughout the reporting period. Now, when it comes to the procurement and contract management, goods and service was transactional value below 500 were procured without obtaining the required price quotation. The goods and service with a transactional value over 500 was not inviting the competitive bids. Invitation for competing bidders were not always advertised, at least at the government tender bulletin. Sufficient audit evidence could not be obtained that imitation of competitive bidders were advertised within the required period. Contracts awarded to bidders who did not submit a declaration of past supply chain management practice, and people in persons of trading entity with a private business interest awarded only to the bidder who submitted to declaration or whether they were employed by the state or connected to any person employed by the state. The next point is allegation of fraud, corruption, improper conduct, failure to comply with the supply chain management system laid against official role player National Primary Register was that in all instances investigated. When it comes to the other issue regarding the appropriation was not always taken against officials who was investigated, and the accounting officer did not in all instances report within 10 working days, and the sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be always maintained by obtained by all contract and quotation awarded. The contract quotation was awarded to be based on the points given for the criteria that is different than the stipulated in original invitation, bidding and quotation. And sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained that the contract quotation was awarded to supply based on the preference points that were allocated and calculated according to the requirement. And another issue dealing with the sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained that the contract quotation awarded only to the bidder who submitted a declaration whether they were employed by the state or connected to any person employed by the state. Person in service of trading entity or who has a private business interest in contract awarded to the trading entity failed to disclose such an issue.
Can you please mind your cups? They're making a lot of noise.
Okay. In the area of strategic planning, the accounting officers did not ensure that the department has maintained an effective, efficient, transparent system of internal control regarding performance management, which described represented how the department process of performance planning, monitoring, measurement, review, and reporting were conducted, organized, and managed. The accounting office or department did not finalize the approved business case for running the trading entity and subsequently did not formulate a policy reporting framework for the head of the trading entity. So having to say so, I wanted to highlight the initiation of the turnaround. The conceptualization of turnaround strategy started from November 2011 with the commissioning of Dallas analysis by the Dow of the National Treasury. And the turnaround at the operational level was started in the current financial year. Therefore, the turnaround could not be impacted on 2011-12 audit outcome. There are 14 projects that have been identified, which is including the anti-corruption, fraud and anti-corruption campaign, the project 2 dealing with the clean audit intervention, project 3 dealing with the finance and SCM stabilization intervention, project 4 is authorization of the PMTE, Project 5, accumulation of immovable assets register. Project 6, audit and review of leases. Project 7, legislative matters. Project 8, the opening of the workshop and building of the skill. Project 9, CAM and the professional services. Project 10, inner city regeneration. Project 11, prestige. Project 12, IT system means IE work and PMIS. Project 13, Government Performance Management Review. Project 14, Regional Support. And when it comes to the Audit Action Plan items, an analysis of 2011-12 audit has been undertaken and the following areas of intervention has been identified and to be addressed as the top priorities. One is immovable assets register. Two, irregular expenditure. Three, leases. Fourth, performance information, the fifth, budget management, six, P&T structure and business case, seven, finance policy and business processes, eight, commercial accounting and billing software procure, ninth, clearance of trade receivable, the tenth, enhanced internal audit capacity. Thank you. That will be the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much, CFO. Honorable members, that's the presentation. I'm happy that the presentation tally with what the AG said this morning. Exactly. And there's no way that we can shut down the department, close the department, because there are few good people in the department. They are not all bad as we think they are. They give us hope. Let us engage now with the presentation. Dreyer will be followed by Madropa. Madropa, Katamabala, Katamabala, Pumzile, Ngwenyamavila, November, Ubaba Geila. Ubaba Swati, in that order.
Thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair. And yes, indeed, I agree with your sentiment that the presentation by the department largely confirms the presentation by the AG earlier today, this morning. So it's good that they acknowledge the problems, and then hopefully it would be addressed. And I'm also grateful that the Minister himself is here and that he's talked to us about the turnaround strategy. That's also welcome information. And I want to focus on that, the turnaround strategy, and especially on page 54 of the department's presentation, where it says projects have been identified, 14 in fact, and then they listed 14 projects. Now, most of the projects relate to problems. So there's a problem identified, and now there's a corresponding project I'm supposed to deal with that problem. So that makes sense. Like, for example, anti-fraud and corruption campaign, great. Clean audit interventions, great, and so on. But then there's a Project 11, Prestige. It just says Prestige, but it doesn't relate to a problem that's been identified early. So I'd like to get more information on this Prestige project, what it includes, and just more information on the Prestige project, please.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Greetings to our Minister and Deputy Minister. Thanks for the presentation by the Acting DG as well as the Acting CFO. Chair, one has to indicate that even though we are contributing to this report, we were alerted long time by the Honorable Minister that we must not expect any difference between this report and the previous report as he was presenting his strategy. And I'm glad, Honorable Chair, that also in the report there is an indication that turnaround strategy could not impact on the 2011-2012 audit outcome, as we know that it was presented for this current financial year for us to focus at. But Honorable Minister, although we have got the answers, because your presentation gave us the answers on the problem, as well as the presentation by your official. But Chair, we must indicate as a committee that we are having a grave concern around the failure of meeting targets, the low targets, total achieved targets that appears on page 124 on the big document. That is indicating that the department only achieved 36%, which means to say that 54%, we know that the contributing factor is program number one and program number two and program number three as indicated. The grave concern is around the fact that if it talks about program two and program three, it's where most of the service delivery lies. So we are really concerned, but hoping that in the next financial year we'll see great improvement around this target that has been achieved, which is 36%. Also, Honorable Chair, one is having also a grave concern. You see, Honorable Chair, from on the issue of public works as well as PMTE, although the Minister has indicated that there is a debate around the issue of PMTE, because to say whether it must remain or it must be a standalone, and the Chair was correctly indicating that it also came out when we were with the Auditor General, to say that we must think about it, maybe separating it, having its own, you know, CEO to focus, as the Minister was alluding in his presentation. But the concern, Honorable Chair, is that these two portfolios, Public Works and PMTE, has been worst performing
for the 4 consecutive years, from 2008 2009 to date. And the issue, I'm not sure, Honorable Chair, because we were told in the previous years that there is a unity dealing with the policy. We are not happy as a portfolio committee about that department, that unit. We raise the issue of the policies, nothing is coming out. We raise the issue of the legislation that must take place, nothing is coming out. Is there still staff in that particular unit, if we can get a clarity? Because if there is a still staff in the policy unit, we don't think they are doing good for the department. They are the embarrassment, if I may say, Honorable Chair. I'm saying this, Honorable Chair, because I'm glad that the Minister has indicated that the Deputy Minister will now focus on the legislation and policy. And also, Honorable Minister, will request that as a portfolio committee, this particular unit must be reviewed and see whether there is any capacity in that particular unit. There is no way, Honorable Chair, that from the 4 consecutive years, the outcome of the Auditor General is the same thing. Policies, controls, nothing that is in place in that particular unit. I think we must really try and look at that particular unit to say whether are we getting value for money? Is the department getting value for money for that particular unit? Also on the issue of immovable estate property, I don't understand the presentation that was there indicating that it was sold below market value, the property of the state. We have got legislation that we have to follow around that particular matter. I don't really understand. Maybe also in that particular unit, the chair will recall when we're having oversight in the Eastern Cape. It's also the embarrassment, I must say that. You know, we once got a response when we're asking questions in the Eastern Cape to say that, what has been this unity doing all along? They told us that, no, we did not know what was it that was expected from us. A very senior person in the unit, the chair will recall. And if we continue using the very same people that does not understand what is the vision of the department or what is the vision of the government around the issue of the immovable property, I think we'll always get this same report that we are getting today. And then lastly, Chair, I will request that, because the Minister is also here, to say that on the issue of the bills that will be coming in place, we were made to understand that Agrima South Africa also, there is a bill that is supposed to be enacted, to be formulated, so that Agrima South Africa has to ensure that they execute their mandate. I'm not sure, Honorable Chair, whether it is contributing also the transfer of money from the department to Agrima South Africa, whether it contributes to the unauthorized expenditure, because in the presentation last time they said that it's not allowed to do that when we're asking, but the department is doing. Also on the issue of the state funeral, Honorable Chair. Okay. This is the last chair, because I requested to leave. The issue of the state funeral, also because it also caused unauthorized expenditure, prior payment of the department for the client department, paying the rates and so the services and rates. I think the department must also focus on this particular issue. There must be a policy around that particular matter, because the Auditor General indicated that the challenge that is there, because we are asking about the alternative. To say he is indicating that there was no alternative policy around this particular matter. Maybe if the department, while dealing with the issue of policy, can focus on that one and that one for prior payment. And the Auditor General indicated that when you lease a property, you pay prior. Why don't we do it as a department so that we prevent those unauthorized expenditures in place? So, Chair, I will pause there at the time, because the Chair is saying we'll get another bite.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, I'm not protected. Thank you, Chair. Chair, first of all, we want to thank the department. But the information that we received this morning, it shows that there's some dysfunctional in some crisis in the department. That you cannot deny it. But Chair, my concern, Chair, is the failure of the department for the maintenance record of all properties rented out by the department. What system do the department have now to correct that? Because that's the crisis. You cannot have a property that are not recorded as a department. And the other one, Chair, is that one of what I want to find out, Chair, the money that has been transferred to Guatemala development. We cannot run away from it. The department must tell us how much have they transferred to the development of Guatemala. No, wait. Of Guatemala development. Because I cannot say it's in Ganda development, because it's not developing in Ganda. I'm from Ganda. I know when we're going to talk about Ganda. We have only one shop at Ganda, which is Upukoka. But the development is at Guatemala. So now what I want to find out from the department, how much have they transferred for that, to that development? And the other one, Chair, is that one of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It shows that there's no record from the department. What is happening? What is the land that's supposed to be recorded to the Department of Public Works? There's nothing. What is happening? All the land that was on they are not recorded yet. What is happening? How many land do we have? How many land have been transferred to other departments, like human settlement? Because I'm sitting in human settlement. There's a crisis in the human settlement, because all the time they say there is nothing that they receive from the Department of Public Works. The IDT, the work of IDT, which is a chaos in other areas, like where I'm coming from. So now we share those things. We need to be clarified from the minister. And the other one, Chair, is that one. The minister gave us the turnaround strategy, which was very good. But we now have the minister is now 6 months in the office. A year in the office. No, I'm talking about the strategy, not him as a minister. Is there any fruit that you are getting from this general strategy? Because I want to remind our minister that we say if you are still having a streamline of acting DG, DPG, and all this, what will be the outcome? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation. Chairperson, although we have noted progress, there are also challenges that we need to highlight for the department to consider and improve on some of the issues that are raised in this report. Chairperson, to me, the supply chain management, I think we've got a weak supply chain management, because most of the issues that have been presented, they just lack of compliance. Because if PFMA was passed in 1999, up to date, there's no person who understands
what to do, when do we need quotation, you know? It means that we've got a serious problem in that unit. Chairperson, the Cape Town service provider that was appointed at the cost of 13.9 million for once off for recording, evaluation of curtains, you know, cushions, carpets. Can that be clarified? Because to me, that was the wasteful and fruitless expenditure. Can this matter be unpacked so that we move with the same understanding? What was the same? Yes. What was, you know, what was the intention of this? Then the other one, Chair, how do you appoint personnel on posts that are not approved and funded? How do you do that? Because that is why we've got an over expenditure on the compensation of employees. Because if you sleep, then the following day you think of appointing or appoint, while knowing very well that the post that we are appointing for has never been approved and not, you know, moreover, not funded. How can this be done really? Because the overspending and underspending, it's just a criminal offense according to the PFMA. Are not allowed to underspend and also to overspend. That is why planning is very much critical. Your spending must be based on what you have planned. So you must be within that limit that you have planned to use the money for. Chairperson, there was this critical and sensitive issue on the monies owed by other departments, because it was also raised by the AG. We've been talking about this matter several times, but, you know, my analysis is that the Department of Public Works doesn't have, you know, proper control systems. I think you remember the day we met with the Home Affairs. You know, Home Affairs has paid the money that it owes to the Department of Public Works. Then they were cleared. 12 months or 6 months down the line, here comes the letter that you owe us. Then they start to ask themselves the question, because we thought that you have paid up the money that you owe to the Department of Public Works. 6 months down the line, the letter is coming. I remember the meeting that we have where we're told that there are not even records or contracts, you know. That makes it difficult for the Department of Public Works, you know, to communicate with the Department of Communication that this is the amount that you have agreed that you will pay. So you owe us so much. I think there's a lack of proper control systems with regards to that one. Chair, the issue of the projects, when looking at the report, the 660 projects, while the department has completed 237. Can you get the reasons for that? Because really the underspending, I will just link that to the underspending on the infrastructure. How can we underspend on the infrastructure? Because the infrastructure is a very important component that is aimed at creating the job opportunity so that you can be able to alleviate the high rate of unemployment and poverty. But if there's, you know, there's underspending on the capital projects and infrastructure, then you start to ask yourself, what is happening? I want to concur with what my colleague Bellew has said with regards to Madlopa. With regards to the project, okay, honourable member, Chairperson, there were lots of outstanding policies: expropriation, renewal of the CPS, the agreement South Africa bill. That is why, when looking in that program, that unit, there's underspending. That is an indication that there's nothing that is taking place. For how long are these policies going to be outstanding, really? Because we've been talking with these matters for some donkey years, but there's no policy that is being coming forth to Parliament for to be considered by this committee. The last one, Chair. The issue of
the officials in the PMTE that has got relationship with suppliers of PMTE. That's just an indication, but we are not told what is happening. Do they have the right? Are they allowed to do that? If they're not allowed to do that, what steps have been taken by the department to make sure that, you know, the policies that are in place, everyone must adhere to, everyone must comply, so that people must not, you know, do what they like at whatever time that they like. Looking at the report, I think we're still experiencing some challenges with regards to the compliance with the Employment Equity Act, the appointment of people with disabilities. What is the challenge in complying with the Employment Equity Act? Thanks, Chair. I think I will just come for a second.
Wanyamavila, Mama Madala, Baba Maguvan.
Chairperson, only two issues for me, and I've been struggling now since that I came here, and it has been reported here in the chat the challenges. Program number 2, the immovable assets, the documentation since 1994. What must we do to get those documentation? If the person that was working with them, if he dies, he cannot die with our documentation. And this is the problem. Because if we could get those documentation, and I think that will be at least going in 2 steps or 5 steps ahead with this asset management. The second one, Chairperson, is Honorable Mwayamabila has alluded to, is in human resource. Others, we understand that there is a cleanup process. Others have to go. Others have to come. But it seems as if we have a deep capacity problem, the vacancy rate. If we look at it, then, you know, 127 were on contract, 83 resigned, okay, it's fine, 81 retired, 45, you can just name them. What is going on? I know the cleanup process. We must clean the department. So that the loss of the 4 months made it done. But is there no speeder process that can fill the vacancies, especially those critical vacancies? I've heard the minister. I've really heard the minister. But this is really worrying me. And thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, the department. That was only two of my concerns.
Honorable Gayla.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Minister, LDG. Your presentation is very good. Yabona Galbana Indomi has bad. Ya Kepam of the GP.
He knows what I'm saying. I say his presentation is good. He knows how to present properly. And how to win. Now, I'm not going to dwell into what happened in this report because you were not there. I see a light at the end of the tunnel because I know the professionals, luckily, and I deal with the professionals, which is public works. There is a light. It is quite true. The baby, the child, you're taking the oxygen out. One, we'd like you to take it out for good. Now, just few clarities, page 50. Regarding the
Cuban professionals. Yes, we can see here because the recruitment was not finalized. But are you prepared to go on with this? Because this is a very good program. That's the first one. Secondly, page 15, the construction project management. What are you doing to get that sorted out? Because this is a problem in this report. In as much as that some of the projects could not be done because of that, what are your plans in future? How are you dealing with that? That's what's important. Then we go to page 64. Also there, regarding the contract workers, that was not achieved. And I think it's also because of the skills that are not within the department. Now, I think this is in line with your call, Minister, whereby you are calling for retired professionals to come and assist. And one would like to know how far you with that. Have you got any positive response? But in line with that, while calling them when they got the experience, what do you say about the youth that need the experience? What is the future plan regarding them? Then we go to page 55. I think the acting DG touched on that one regarding the vesting. But also the we've lost lot of employment because of that, of not having the, can you just explain to us what you intend to do in future? What I need is, what do you intend so that next year I can come hard at you? I can't come hard on you now. Then page 66, the template, also, if you can come to us and explain to us, and also the service level agreement at the bottom, there are no service level agreement that have not been signed with the other departments. What is it being done to address that problem as well? Then page 67, the reduction of the revenue collection. You are supposed to have collected 20%, you collected 10.9%. What do we do in future to make sure that that is so that then at the bottom there, your energy, reduced energy consumption. Now, acting DG, why I'm on this one here, at the villages where we live, those contractors who fit their globes, they don't use energy-saving globes. And that is very important. And here in Parliament, too. So what are you doing to get the government buildings to use energy-saving globes? Then we go to page 68. Regarding the accessibility of disabled people to get into government buildings. Yes, a delay of procurement. Now, I don't want to get into that, but most of the government buildings, there are some buildings that are one story, where you can fit in your guys who are grade one. That's where you can fit in your grade one. So what has been done about that as well? Then page 770. The appointment of consultants. Uh, duplication of projects by CIDP, how do we address that one as well? If you can talk to us on that, Minister. Page 71, the training of learners, young professionals, how do we address that? In, I think I've spoken about that. I'm just about finished with this, with the first lot. Yeah. No, I see the way. then page 72, client complaints. 72, client complaints. Also speak to us, how do we do towards the future? As I say, we talk about the future. We're not talking about then. Page 73, 74, 76, appointment of HID cooperatives and AB as main contractors. There you lack as well the, how do we address that? Because we need to get them in these big projects as well. Page 74, capital projects. If you can talk to us on the capital projects there as well. And then page 76, your debtors. Then we go to page 138. I think that is in line with the, what Honorable Dreyer was saying, the capital projects. If you can explain to us the, there's about 138 million for capital projects. But, Minister, we don't want to get into the security things. This has got to do with the security. We don't want to know what gadgets are used and what. But I think just explain to us. In fact, also in line with the Honorable Stolle, Gandla, how much was spent? We are members of Parliament, we're members of your committee. Don't go into details. How much was the money spent? How much was spent? Take us into your confidence, because we've taken you into our confidence, because with the turnaround study, we want you to as well to take us in your confidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sajjan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Some of my questions have been covered, but I'll also ask a question of clarity where actually my other questions were not covered. My first one is with regard to job creation in terms of EPWP, where it was actually indicated that 4.5 million job opportunities will be created. But when I'm looking into these other slides, slides on page 29, I discovered that on program 3, the expanded public works program, it was allocated 1.5 billion, but it only spent 1.1 billion, and the percentage was 76%. So I just want to be clarified as well. Is that actually indicating that we are serious about actually creating 4.5 billion? Job opportunities if we really don't spend this kind of money that we have been allocating? That's my first question. And my second one is with regard to the under expenditure and over expenditure, and also the report coming from the EPWP. It was indicated that somewhere we actually don't get reports, adequate reports in terms of what has happened in this program. So I just want to find out, because when I was looking into the turnaround strategy, I didn't see how are you going to actually make sure that this is not actually happening, because in the EPW, in your turnaround strategy, Minister, it is not actually indicated as to whether if you are going to put more emphasis on EPWP. It is only other programs, but EPWP is not actually reflecting. But you also said that it is a very critical program that the government will actually focus at. But I don't see some of that in the turnaround strategy. My other question is with regard to the movement from private lease buildings to a government building by a client department. It was actually indicated by the CEO, by the DG, that the intention is to move from that to actually the state-owned buildings. So I just want to know, when is that going to happen?
already they have started with actually doing that, because it is actually consuming a lot of government money. But I just, how far are you, and when is the process going to be completed? Thank you very much.
Honorable Nwane.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. First of all, I think I need to thank the presenters for their openness and honesty. I think at least it's going to take us somewhere. I'm just hoping. First of all, I'll apologize, Comrade Chair, if maybe I ask the questions that have been asked by others. I've been out for some time. Okay, my first question is around the GIAMA, the Government Immovable Asset Management Act of 2007, and the implementation thereof at local level, which should have been done 3 years ago. I mean, 3 years after 2007. But now, 5 years down the line, still not, it has not been implemented. I think it's one of the reasons why this asset register, we don't get it right, because at local level, really the municipalities are struggling to get this asset register correctly. Secondly, it's about the risk management policy that was approved in 2009, and there's this audit and risk management committee. I would like to check if really, I mean, we get the disclaimer for two consecutive years, and yet there are people who get full payment who are within the department. And they are supposed to identify these issues long before they come to the Auditor General. So, do we get the value for money from because they are supposed to be doing internal audit reports to give us investigation reports to do the strategic risks of the department and financial performance of DPW. we are really questioning the capacity of this committee. It is questionable. on PMTE, the AG suggested that maybe we could have two CFOs, but I was under the impression that I knew. My thinking was around maybe we could have two departments, the PMTE alone with its ministry, and then this the other one. The construction, because those are huge, we're talking about billions. I mean, you have touched on that one. I think I fully agree with you. Either we have two CFOs for one CFO managing this property management entity. And on human resources management, some of these, I mean, you can't have a person in charge of finances not even understanding the qualifications of the staff that is working in the department. That was the point that was raised by the CFO. Okay, there's this sector education training authorities, the CETA, for skills and for training and skills development in the construction, that was allocated 278,000. I hope it is 278, not 278 million. To me, that CETA is really not assisting us that much. Do we have any reports from this CETA as to how many people have been trained? What is it really doing? Do we have reports from this CETA? And how many people have been trained? What are they doing? I mean, or this amount of money goes to administration only. Lastly, Chair, I think it's about the... Oh, my last question is, it's around the on page 93 and 94 on this environment, on program one. I think it is a trend. It's been going on for years and years, the environment. And like the minister indicated, sometimes the project starts at 300 million, but it ends up over a billion because of shifting of these funds and doing all this, and the inflation of the prices by this in the process. And lastly, it's about on page 94. Okay, it's in the book. It said there was the payment of new computers and furniture. My question is around the old furniture. What's happening around the old furniture? I mean, if you have enough money to buy the new furniture, and yet you have got stacks and stacks of new furniture in here in Parliament, in Waterfront, and in Pretoria. So what's happening? Can't we save somehow, one way or the other? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mama Madala.
Thanks, Chairperson, most of the questions are taken by my colleagues, but I want to emphasize on consultants. On page 319, I see that there's a 42.9 million which was spent on 100 consultants, and when I calculating it's between 1 to 2 years per project. So I want a clarity from the department about these consultants. Are they trying to stay away, to improve, do things on their own? Because 42.9 million is too much from the Chairperson. The other thing about the Auditor General this morning, he gave us some advice how the department can improve. I just want to know if they can just hint that, are they following those recommendations put forward by the Auditor General this morning, such as that they are still using the old system of IE Works, you know, departments not paying, they should pay before time. Are they really following those recommendations? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama. Mama Guban.
Thank you, Chair. And I would want to thank the presenters. My question is around the three spheres of the government that the minister has adhered to. My question is, there are properties in local government, provincial and national. The problem is that all these properties are lying unused, and they are dilapidating in all over the country. And when you go to the local government offices, you ask a question as to who is in charge of these properties. They will tell you that you go to the provincial. You go to the provincial, they will say go to the national. And you find that there is nobody who knows the correct story about about these properties. There are funds, big funds, which are lying unused. And you'll find that the chiefs are taking advantage of that. They would say that, oh, Makubane is tall and ugly and fearful. I'm going to put him there. He's going to supervise this place and sell small plots to people. I mean, without authority. He will do that from his own mind without giving authority to that farm that he can utilize all those things. And now, because of the department, the reason is that the department is not doing a proper job that will see to it that these farms are being implemented and be used properly. For instance, I'm from deep rural. I'm talking about the things I know. These farms, they are there. They are supposed to be given, for instance, to the cadres, veterans, MK, VA soldiers, and be utilized. But those people are sitting down doing nothing, looking for jobs. They can't be employed. Some of them are old, as I am. They cannot they can no longer be employed. So when is the public works going to see to it that these farms are being given to the people in a proper manner, and they work, they use them to for employment for other people? Thank you.
Thank you, Baba. Honorable Minister, on page 314, there are outcomes of disciplinary hearings. So I just want to check with the Minister whether the Umtata criminal cases have been attended to. Are they part of this list of disciplinary hearings? And if they are not, why not? Because those cases have been outstanding for quite a long time. People are suspended and people don't want to comply. The issue that was raised by Honorable Ngwenya Mabila of curtains and scatter cushions, how can we hire 21 consultants to go and deal with curtains, scatter cushions, rugs? 21 consultants. Honorable Minister, I don't understand. Meanwhile, we were told that all the ministers that come in, they have got their special choice of furniture, they have got their special choice of rugs, of pictures and all that, and we hire these 21 people to do what? We really don't know what's happened. 21 consultants and we pay around 39 million for doing, for counting the scatter cushions, for counting curtains. What is it that we are... We don't understand. Can we be explained? 21 consultants, and on the other page, you are talking about 20. And I don't understand what is this number. Honorable Minister. The other issue, Minister, that will take us long. There's a list of claims. Entities claiming from... those who performed services, those from the services also claiming back from the department. You know, there's this, I don't understand, Minister. I will check and I will go through, 273. Manong claiming, and somebody claiming. I don't understand, Minister. Let me just open 273. You see on page 273, there's plaintiff, nature of claim, and amount. If you look at Bonga Commercial, Manong, on page 273, you open on 274, you will see something different. The plaintiff is now claiming from the defendant. I don't understand what's going on. Can we be explained on that one, CFO? Because it confuses me. They are the same issues running around, we don't know. And also, they are... Let me just stop there for a minute. Over to you, CFO, Acting DG. The Minister would like to start responding. Over to you, Minister.
Chairperson, I'll just take two questions, and maybe the GM... would take some questions, and then we allow the DG and the CFO. In relation to the question from Honorable Dreyer about prestige, can we say more? Prestige, Honorable Chair, we're talking about those affected by the ministerial handbook in terms of acquiring and maintaining their accommodation. But it also goes beyond that. But if you were to talk about the key clients for prestige, you talk about the presidency. We're talking about president and deputy president. You would also talk about ministers. You talk about judges. And sometimes some of the people, they take up a residence in Cape Town and in Pretoria. Some take one residence, but there are certain conditions which you have to deal with when they are using private residence. But central to that is about how do you maintain all those. But also now, we are having a new challenge. It's about the parliamentary villages. It's becoming a very big issue. But let me just make an example. You might have heard about inflated refurbishment cost or renovation cost, where you have a house in Cape Town under renovations taking a year to 2 years. But when you build your own house, it takes you not more than 6 months. Now, this is a standing house, and then you end up paying about 5 to 6 million. And then you start asking questions. Very interesting. We've been told, and these prices come with service providers. And some of the reasons which are being cited by our officials is that these are heritage houses. So when you renovate that heritage house, you don't touch that structure. It must be maintained as it was when it was commissioned. And then they get very expensive to look for the special material to keep it intact. That's what we're always told, that special material has to be ordered from whatever and so on, so that you keep it as is. And most of these ministerial houses here and in Pretoria are old houses. In fact, that is why some of them, you fix them, the following month you have to come and fix again. And what is very clear, there's a need for a detailed assessment of all these houses. And this question that they are heritage, what you call houses, what does it mean in terms of the expenses? That is one area. But people hide sometimes behind that to inflate the cost. Because you sit with the professionals or you sit with the people who cannot interrogate what comes from the service providers. They just accept it as is. Sometimes it's the lack of the skill, because even the people who have the necessary skill, cost engineers, you don't have them. If you have them, they might be deployed somewhere, deliberately so that you have very weak people who can be able to interact with these things and quickly sign. What is very interesting to me, I want to emphasize, this thing of thinking that corruption is only in the public service is wrong. Because it's a collusion of some private providers and companies for that matter with the people inside the department. So when we talk about prestige, because it's part of the projects, sometimes it's about construction, sometimes prestige is about acquiring new houses. Common knowledge that a cabinet was expanded and you had to acquire some new houses. And some of those things are very shocking at the prices at which houses are being bought. And there's this tendency even in the private sector to say, I'm selling for government. I know it very well in rural development when we're dealing with trying to acquire farms. Honorable Ngwenya Mavila knows this very well. If it's an individual, private citizen buying a farm from a farmer, it can easily be about 3 million. But if it's government buying, they can easily say it's 30 million. We've had such cases. So even the private sector is having those. So prestige is the whole thing. And I will allow later on the DG to respond to the issue, because it's linked to prestige, as to how much we spent in the Nkandla development. What do you call it? Kwanyamalala development. I will allow the DG, because it's not in my knowledge, as to how much we have spent in that particular project. I've heard people talking about contributions and contributions, but not in my knowledge, but I would allow the DG to deal with that. So when we talk about prestige, we're talking, therefore, all these houses, how we maintain them and so on and so on. But also part of the prestige is the cleaning staff which is there. The cleaning staff, they are part of these big protect properties which we are dealing. How do you manage all that? So that's what I can say about prestige. The second question which I thought I need to also say, because I've deliberately or I've delayed engaging, it was raised by Honorable Gaylor on the Cubans. Honorable Gaylor, I've delayed engaging on this matter to the frustration of the Cuban ambassador until he left, because he felt they were just in the limbo, whether we're saying yes or no. The reason for that delay, it's a matter which we have to take up with the new ambassador. Excuse me. The reason for that delay is it coming into this chaos. Where do you start? Do you add by coming up with the other things, or do you start sorting out the chaos which is there, first things first? That's what was confronting us. And I said, let's hang on before we engage, but we're going to engage in terms of acquiring that. But I think there's going to be even more need now, because the big debate at the level of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Program is the question of the skills, the technical skills. And technical skills not only in Cuba. Technical skills might be even from the other countries, but what are the conditionalities which we're going to put in place in terms of dealing, because that must be an interim strategy whilst we are developing our own skill. And the development of our own skill speaks to the universities, speaks to the construction companies. And one of the things which we have said we're going to do, when we give huge contracts, we must set conditions that you must be able to take so many young professionals. At the end of your project, they must have qualified, especially these young ones who qualify from university, because back on Amam, they qualify from universities, but the gatekeepers do not allow them there. So we are also talking about such things. We're looking into that. We've been debating it at the level of the PICC. Before the... Oh, yes. Umtata, no. Chairperson, it doesn't include these latest cases. But let me clarify myself here. What I was trying to say, the corruption drive is not only at the headquarters, but what is happening in Umtata? We have said with the help of the SIU, we've managed to deal with those corruption cases in Umtata. Eight criminal cases have been opened with the police against service providers. And that matter now is before the Director of Criminal Prosecutions. The cases relate to fraud and corruption which is linked to the water discharging projects in the region. Internally, there are a number of our officials who are implicated. We're going to begin a process, but we can't report about them because it's something recently happened. So as I was saying, as the SIU is releasing, finishing investigation on some of the information, we deal with them. Let me also just, as a parting shot, raise something else. You would remember that we hinted something about the border posts. And yourselves, you raised questions about the border posts, scale part, and so on. I think it was after some visit. What we can say, we working again with the criminal, what you call, agencies. We're opening up a big case against some contractors and some former officials of the department. But you remember I said in one meeting, because of the sensitivity of some of these issues, you don't start coming up with names until all your processes have been done properly. Otherwise, you can be seriously implicated. And linked to this is this question of why don't we quickly deal with some of the officials? I just want to agree that our labor legislation has to be followed to the letter. So when you deal with those officials, there's a lot of processes which you have to follow. And here's the reality which is facing us in public works. To deal with some of the officials, you have to rely on your own legal. That very own legal unit which has its own shenanigans. Now you have to go outside to look for the legal people to help you in dealing with some of the issues. That's the reality which is facing us. But also, it's easy for me to charge DGs and DDGs. But I must rely on the DDGs to charge those who are below or to gather the information and so on. Now you sit there with acting. Even some of in these areas where there are problems, the person has been suspended. Take, for instance, the current CFO. She's just come in to act for her to be able to touch those people there whilst concentrating on trying to fix some of the projects on the short term. It becomes very, very difficult. I think that some of the issues can start running fast properly once we stabilize the leadership at the top. I can safely say this week we're supposed to have interviewed for the CFO, and I can also tell you that we have concluded now. Remember in the last meeting I said we are concluding with Dongwana. We have concluded an agreement now. And maybe this weekend or next weekend, once I've consulted with the DM, you might see the advert for the DG. Because you can't have the minister and the acting DG thinking that they can do this thing significantly, because you're dealing with an acting DG. You're dealing with resistance even inside that particular department. But we think that once we have a DG, you have a CFO permanent, you deal with these other cases, that's why we're making them a priority. Then you can be able to deal with the other levels. But if you have not stabilized there, forget about touching the other issues. I thought that I must just make those few comments. Then I think DM and DG and the CFO would be able to follow up on a number of other areas, or even on the same issues I've raised.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be very brief, but just to touch on some of the issues, particularly in areas which, as the Minister has indicated, will begin to be taken up a little bit by the Deputy Minister. First of all, to agree with the colleagues, the honourable members who've said that there's a belief, a perception that there's weaknesses in the policy program of the department. I think the Minister and myself agree with that analysis. That's not to say that there are not good colleagues in that program, but there are weaknesses and we do need to address them. The one issue that was raised, I think the colleague has now left, was around legislation that never that is promised from year to year but never gets to come to Parliament. I'm partly guilty for one of the bits of legislation that the colleagues were trying to introduce, and that's around Agrément SA. That legislation that's been pending, partly at the instance of Treasury, which is saying that the funding flow is problematic. It comes to us to Agrément, but the status of Agrément itself is problematic. The proposal that in the draft legislation or draft policy basically that was coming to us was to set it up entirely as a new entity. And I think that's something we need to look at, but we're dealing with a cabinet, as the Minister knows, that is a little bit tired of seeing endless new entities being created, the proliferation of entities. And so what I've said to the colleagues in the policy program of the department is, can it not be housed in some other way so that we're not proliferating entities? And one suggestion is to look at the CIDB as a possible location, not physical location, but institution location for AgriMaSA. So that's the reason. So we're not trying to delay legislation. We do need to sort the matter out. But I've just asked them to take a second look at the possibility of housing it in a way that isn't proliferating these entities with more boards, with more CEOs, more CFOs and so on. It's a tiny entity with about 17 employees. To create a whole separate entity strikes me as being something, and I think we would have faced difficulty in getting it through Parliament. But having said that, I don't want it to be kicked into touch forever. We do need to come back in the course of, next year, early next year, hopefully, with a policy and approach, legislative approach to AgriMaR South Africa. The Honourable Swaki raised questions about the Expanded Public Works Program. I think we also had that discussion this morning with the Auditor General. It's true that there has been understanding, as we discussed this morning, and as the acting CFO mentioned this afternoon, there's been understanding. That understanding, particularly in the infrastructure side of things, of the Expanded Public Works Program, has, as we agreed, largely to do with difficulties at the municipal sphere in terms of accounting and so forth for the Expanded Public Works Program, which is why we are now front-loading the payments to municipalities for Expanded Public Works Programs by 40% and then two tranches of 30% and 30% to try to overcome that, and there are other remedial measures. So it is of concern to us that there's been underspending there. Hopefully we can correct the underspending. However, the question you were asking was partly that, but then it was related to why does it not feature the Expanded Public Works Program on slide 55, where 14 projects were identified in the turnaround strategy. Well, the reason for that is we're not saying that anything that's not there on slide 55 is of no interest or concern to the department. But those 14 projects that are listed there are areas where there are serious problems, potentially of fraud and corruption, but of very serious problems that require focused attention by the turnaround team. So that's why the 14 are there, and the expanded, for instance, anti-fraud and corruption campaign, project one, keyed audit, project two, and so on and so forth. That's why those are listed, but that's not to say that other issues are of not ongoing concern and interest, like the Expanded Public Works, but we don't think that the Expanded Public Works Program has been in the ICU, and according to the chief surgeon here, who's just told us, it's now out of ICU, but still undergoing serious care out of ICU. We don't think that the Expanded Public Works Program belongs in that problem. But there are some challenges. So that's the explanation for why it's not featuring on slide 55. The very last point that I want to raise is, Honourable Member, I don't think that creating two departments and therefore two headaches rather than one is the solution to the PMTE issue, but you're absolutely right. As is the AG, we've got to apply our minds to this. The Minister himself said, we're running this massive property portfolio out of a chief director, from a chief director level. It's asking for trouble. It's asking for problems. It's very unprofessional. It's very amateurish. And therefore, and although there's a debate around what to do, we can't allow that debate to go on for too long. We've got to establish the PMTE as an effective trading entity with serious capacity to run this massive portfolio. So we agree with your concern. We're not sure that your solution of a second department is quite the right one. We're battling with one department. let's stick with it. So, Chairperson, those are some of the issues which are beginning to touch upon the area that the Minister has asked me to look after, the policy area, the Expanded Public Works area. Hopefully those are issues. The rest, I think, that the rest of the issues, I think, can much more adequately be dealt with by, and more appropriately by, the acting DG and the acting CFO. And like the minister, I've also got a time constraint, so if I could be excused in silence. My apologies for that.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, the minister has been invited by SABC for an interview. So I thought I should inform you why he left. DG?
I think the chairperson, honourable members. The issue of the selling of state property at below market value should not arise. Requires immediate attention, because before you sell property, it has to be evaluated. We have valuers inside the department, and the Land Affairs Board was established to ensure that they conduct proper oversight over these policies, sorry, over these transactions. But we'll look into this particular matter at Shepherd's, but it should not really arise unless there was under the table kind of agreement around that. The issue of funeral police, I just want to remind honorable members that we'll pay attention to that, but what is important is that funerals are the category of a funeral given to a cabinet minister. It's a determination by the state president, whether it's category 1, category 2, or category 3. But it does not take away the fact that Program 5, where all of this expenditure lies, needs a proper regulation. Because what we normally do is to write to Treasury and request that they reimburse the department to deal with that expense, which is categorized as unavoidable. And what's the second term? Unforeseeable and unavoidable. But we'll look into that. But in the handbook, in the ministerial handbook, the categories are there. I will normally email that part of the that deals with the funerals to honourable members. There was a question around the system to ensure that we have a proper system to to look after our properties. There's proper capturing. Yes, we admit that we have a CAKE system, the PMIS, the Property Management Information System. We're working with the AG to actually look at what we can do to actually obtain some kind of solution to this. The reason being, with the pressure on the fiscals, we will try, but we're not sure if Treasury is going to respond positively to actually fund a system for public works. Because now it's a question of what's available from the fiscal. Because this issue of systems, it tends at times to be a bit awkward, whereby you have all these consultants coming to you and selling you all types of systems. But we're working with the AG now. There's a committee looking at that particular issue. Because the AG in the previous audit, not this one, they actually took information from that PMIS to do rigorous analysis of what was happening. So you find that the capturing of leases and any other properties, there's no correlation. So it's a system issue that actually causes the disclaimer. We know that, but now it's about acquiring a system to deal with that. And therein lies the problem and the delays from Treasury to actually fund the system. This has been a rollover issue for over the years. We had before gone to Treasury to ask for money to get a new system, but at that time there was no willingness to give public works money. They always invoke historical experience of what happened when public works was given money for the system. Some of these issues are historical, and some of us
we find that we don't even, probably we're not even in public works when that money or that budget allocation was made. Honorable members, I just need clarity. When you say Kwanqamalala, are you talking about the president's house? I'm not so sure. So I just need clarity on that.
Kwanqamalala is not a president's house. It's an area of president. Kwanqamalala is the area of the village of president.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, but yeah, I know that, but I asked specifically about the elite project, and I wanted to know, as the minister indicated before he left us, the acting DG would tell us how much was actually spent on Okhandla, the president's house. So I'm waiting for that.
Andrea, you were outside when the minister made a commitment that the acting DG will respond on this issue. So you were outside, my sister. I saw you going out.
Yeah.
So three people asked the question. It's you, yourself, Honorable Stole, and Honorable Leila. There's going to be...
It's about... I don't know where to put it, but honorable player, saying I'm going to chance, and if I had a hand of Hatel, then creating guns, on the brat, we met in a Hatel, a small thing of spare time.
Can we allow the acting DG? Eselemu, are you tired? Yeah, you look tired. Gigi, can you please respond? Withdraw that for that word. The one she said. Gigi?
Yeah, the development of the Kwanqamalala, the village, I'm just gonna ask the acting COO to respond to that. But on the issue of the president's house, it's important, Chairperson, that I explain what I've also said before. Public Works is not a security department. It does not carry out security assessments for the president or deputy president. What Public Works does, delivers infrastructure. And on the basis of a security assessment by the security department, the role of Public Works just to deliver the infrastructure. We don't get what they have picked up and why the security cluster would have, we don't necessarily concern ourselves, for lack of a better word, on interrogating why the security assessment report is saying ABCD, but we just get, I guess, the end product from that process that says do ABCDE based on the security assessment. And I also want to say that this classified project, the President's House, apart from the fact that it's declared a national key point, but it's also a classified project. We need to agree on that. I know that the media has been on this issue as if it's something that you are hiding and everything else, but it falls under classified projects. It's regulated by pieces of legislation that the security cluster department could come here and explain in detail, from the Defense Act to the Protection of Information Act. I know that there's this notion that this is apartheid legislation, but it is my belief that even if it's apartheid legislation, guess what? We still live in the Republic that inherited an apartheid past. And some of these legislation, pieces of legislation, may not yet be reviewed if people perceive them to be problematic. But that's not my concern, because they don't emanate. We are not the custodians of those legislation, but we provide a framework within which we answer as Public Works that our responsibility is to deliver infrastructure, and the President's House it falls under classified projects, which have been, I need to emphasize this, for the very first time we have opened these classified projects, Chairperson, under during this period to actually be audited by the AG. The AG, they know what they have done. They've given us a response to deal with gaps of dealing with classified projects, but the President's House falls under classified projects. And the expenditure, the AG, the directive to the AG was to say, look at governance issues as well, and also determine whether taxpayers' money has been properly used. Because the AG would look at such things, because when you're dealing with classified projects, you have to also be mindful of the issue of abuse of taxpayers' money. It doesn't need to be complicated. It's taxpayers' money. So as a minister and as an accounting officer, you must, like the AG, satisfy yourself that taxpayers' money has not been abused, has been used properly, and if there are endless variation orders, there must be justification for variation orders, whether classified or unclassified. Now, I would like the committee to at least take me into their confidence that we are on the right track, we are doing the right thing, and to speculate about figures about the President's House is not going to be any of assistance, because even the media that has exposed these figures, you're basically illegally holding classified information. You can go to any country in the world. It's actually not right to be boasting about holding classified information. I like to make this example that probably, maybe because of my ignorance, the first time I learned that there was a bunker in the White House was when President Bush was taken there during 9/11. I don't remember the Americans boasting about the architectural mapping of the White House. And I think we need to have a full understanding that there would always be classified things in any country in the world, and South Africa is no different. And also we actually be clear about the rules of engagement about some of these classified projects, as long as that independent office of the Auditor General is given access to look at this information to ensure that there is no abuse of taxpayers' money. The issue of unsurveyed land, all land has been surveyed.
Just so that we're clear in what we're communicating, what you're saying is that we have, as the department, requested for the AG's office to be able to check in this particular case whether there's been the abuse of public money, basically, in the expenditure. We are awaiting the report. We don't yet have the full report. If there's any indication of abuse of taxpayers' money, we will obviously be bound to take action and commit to doing that. Am I correct in understanding exactly what you're saying? I think that's the message that we're trying to get across. We're trying to say that, you know, given the track record, as I said this morning, given the track record of this department and many cases of fraud and corruption and abuse of public funds, we cannot with confidence say that there is or isn't such a case, such challenges in this particular project. We can't say with confidence. It's for that reason that exceptionally, because normally these kinds of projects, which are security rated in this particular way, are not looked at by the AG. We've proactively requested with the relevant security cluster to allow the AG to go in and check, not to see whether there's a bunker or there isn't a bunker or anything like that. That's neither AG's concern nor our concern, but are the contracts clean? Are the variations, justified variations, if there are variations and so on? And we undertake when we have clarity in this matter, we undertake, one, to take action and also to inform Parliament and therefore by Parliament the public as to anything that we find, if there's anything untoward. Am I correct in interpreting exactly what you said? So I think just so that we're very clear, we're not dodging behind security matters and so on, and we appreciate that your concerns are the same as our concerns, which is taxpayers' money being wasted, or you know, has the public been defrauded? It's a correct concern. It's a parliamentary concern. It's our concern as well. And we want, and as we say, we've proactively taken steps to ensure that there's the exceptionally in this case, because it's unusual, but we feel it's really important. We've asked, and so the AG has been on the matter.
On the issue of
Armandrea,
just a follow-up on that matter. I remember very clearly, I heard correctly, and I even wrote it down, before the minister left, he said on the cost of Nkandla, the DG, will leave it to the acting DG to inform the committee how much was spent on Nkandla. Those were his words. In other words, I understand it as an instruction to the acting DG. She can go ahead and she should tell the committee what was the cost of Nkandla. Now it seems we're not getting a clear answer, and they're still ducking and diving, and I'm going to say it again, hiding behind apartheid legislation. Are we going to get an answer on the cost of Nkandla House from this department or not? Can I just have a clear yes or no answer?
Honorable Drea, in the morning, I indicated to the meeting that I received your letter yesterday morning, and I forwarded the letter to the minister on Nkandla and Fernwood, and I made a request that let us leave the department to look into the letter that you have written for them to be able to respond. I thought that is the procedure that we need to follow, and I agree you want to know and nobody wants to stop you from knowing the figures and all, but because of the letter that you have written, why don't you wait for them to respond to acknowledge receipt of the letter? That's my understanding. Deputy Minister, if I'm wrong, subject to correct me.
I think you're right. I think what we're saying, let me not make a political point. It's a bit rich when some people talk about apartheid legislation, but let's leave it at that. What we want...
I object to that statement, Madam Chair. I object to that statement.
Okay, as I object to your statement that we are hiding behind apartheid legislation, but let's leave it at that. What we are saying to this committee is that we are interacting with the AG. We want to satisfy ourselves and the public that there's not been abuse, and if there is abuse of taxpayers' money in this matter, we undertake to report back, as you are suggesting, Chairperson, on this matter. And that's where we are leading at the moment. We're not ducking the matter. We are dealing with it responsibly.
Deputy Minister, on page 324, there's a list of old acts that are still operational. And I don't understand why Honorable Drea is saying we are hiding, they are hiding, the department is hiding behind an old apartheid. What about this act, all these acts that are listed here that have not been repealed or amended or whatever? Let us be honest with ourselves so that God can have mercy on us. And let us not mislead the people of South Africa, because there are a list of acts here that have not been amended or repealed or whatever. Let us be honest. Why special act? That's a special act. Because there are a lot of acts here that we must amend, and we're not doing that. I'm sorry, Deputy Minister. I wanted just to put the record so that this is not the only act that need to be attended to. And this is not the only old act that is being utilized by this government. There are other acts here that are being utilized by the government. Honorable Mbanye Mabila.
Chairperson, I understand that members want this matter to be urgently or to be fast-tracked. But I don't think that is going to assist us if we're dealing with this matter in piecemeal. Because they can brief us now,
We are still awaiting the response from the department, as you have said that you have referred the letter to the minister to consider it and respond. While on the other side, there's this investigation that is taking place by the AG. While on the other side, we read that the public protector is also investigating. I think all those, the information, if gathered together, can assist us to discuss the matter and take decision, because by that time we'll be informed of really what is happening. But I don't think now we can just discuss this matter, you know, being blank. We don't know anything about it. We are just being briefed. There's an investigation taking place. When there's an outcome of the investigation, we're going to start afresh again discussing the matter. I will request that we wait then for the response of the department, although I don't know how the investigation is going, how long is the investigation is going to take, so that when we discuss the matter, we've got all these reports in front of us, because really now we're just confused, we're just, you know, listening, but we're not really, we don't have information, detailed information about the matter.
Honorable Gayla,
followed by Mabasitoli.
Chairperson, when I engage the minister on this matter, I say that we need to know, as members of this committee, because we can ask them as representing people, how much has been spent. It's all simple. That's what we need to know. Not any difficulties. Now, if you're saying you're waiting for the AGs and report, Deputy Minister, how do you belong to within that report will take? Because their report is going to give you details. We don't need that. All we need is how much has been spent. And that is our right to know. Because we are representing people here, and that takes people's money. That is simple. I made it very clear. We just need to know how much was spent. We don't want to know about bankers and all that. Because after all, we overseeing this department here. When we don't know the money that are spent in this department, that's the truth of the matter. We cannot run away from it. We need to know. Thank you.
Almost 12.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, our question, or my question, was not looking for logistics of the development, but the clear what we want to know, how much was given to the construction of that development. Because Chairperson has been talking to you. I'm from Kandla, I'm from Kute, that's in Kandla. I know what I'm talking about. That's why I said they mustn't say in Kandla development. There's no development in Kandla, but the development is that Port Namalala village. And I think also Port Namalala, not in Kandla. I'm from the rural area of Kandla. I know what I'm talking about. So we want to know how much was been given to that construction by the Department of Public Works.
DJ.
As I say, we are looking. We understand the request, and we are not in a position, as we speak now today, to provide an accurate and effective answer. That's the truth of the matter, and we will come back to the committee.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I actually wanted to make a follow-up with what my two colleagues have just indicated. Because this is in the media. The media is putting figures there. So if the media is putting figures, we are very much interested to know as to whether those figures are correct or not correct. I thought maybe the Deputy Minister was going to say, we have utilized this amount. Then we will know as members of this committee, even if people ask us outside, is it true that it's reflecting on the media or is it not true, then we can actually be able to get figure. We're not saying we want to know the detailed information of what that man was utilized for.
or which security code that they actually wanted to present. But what we are saying we just need only the figure to know how much was spent from our portfolio committee, where we are actually representing our various political parties and the public of South Africa. Thank you.
Chairperson, we're going round in circles. We've heard what they said. They have heard what we've said. I think we should close the matter on that note.
They're not happy
with our responses, but it's pointless them repeating their points because the response is going to be the same. We are not at liberty at this point, for a variety of reasons, to disclose a specific figure, but we are certainly, like you, concerned about any potential abuse of public funds. That's our answer, and we will simply go on repeating it, and we'll simply go on repeating your question. So I suggest that we close the matter on that note.
Do you still want to come in, Moya Nabil?
Yes, madam. Chairperson, I think let's wait. If the department is not ready or to give us a figure, because if they can tell us that it's 10 rand, because we want them to give that as the figure now. Then 2 weeks down the line, they tell us it's 20 rand. Then what is it that we're going to say? The department is indicating that they can't give us the figure now. Let's accept that and wait. Let them gather the information and come and tell us exactly the amount. But also, Chairperson, I think we're members of Parliament. I don't think that it will be correct for our agenda, for the agenda of this committee, to be dictated by the media. Because that will indicate that we are not playing our oversight. Then the media is oversighting on our behalf. When the media raise an issue, then we jump, you know. We want the information. Let's wait. If that information didn't appear in the media, what is it that we are going to want about this project? But let's wait. I think it's correct. We know about the project. Let's wait for the department to provide us with the accurate and realistic information, then we'll take it from there. I think we're all responsible for oversight. If there's no value for money, we'll indicate that. If there's something that went wrong, we're not afraid, we'll say it upfront. There's nothing wrong, Chair. Let's wait. There's no hurry in South Africa. The matter will come to the table. We'll take it from there.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I understand you to say they cannot provide cost if they do not know original budget or what was used when dealing with security. So let us give them enough time. They are in South Africa. They are members of Parliament. DG and the CFO are employed by the Department of Public Works. Can we agree, Honourable Members, that they will come back to us? Let's have confidence in them and let them acknowledge the letter written by Honourable Dreyer. Deputy Minister is not a government official that he can just some suck figures here, even with the DG. Can we agree on that? Yes. Thank you very much.
If I could just want to add one further thing. I think that what the acting DG was alluding to is that the other predicament that we find ourselves in is obviously legislation. Okay. So in addition to trying to establish the facts of the matter, and our key concern is that there's not the abuse of funds and so on, that's our key issue. But in terms of the quantum, which is what colleagues are asking for, one of the things that we need to check is whether in making a particular figure publicly known, whether in fact we are not infringing legislation, whether it's from whatever era or whatever era.
Mm.
So, and in particular, we need to protect our officials who could then be charged if indeed they're breaching. So in addition to that, I think we need to be very clear. We're not necessarily, we're saying it's something we hope to make public. I mean, we're not hiding anything. But we do need to make sure that that we're not breaking the law as well, and we need to protect the acting DG and ourselves, not protect some figure or fact. So we'd be very anxious to respond to all of the stuff that we're seeing in the newspapers and what may well be inflated figures and so forth. So we're quite anxious to go. But that is another challenge. And as long as certain bits of legislation are current as they are, we need to ensure also that we are not exposing, for instance, an acting DG to that. So I think members need to understand that issue.
Yeah. That is Protection of Information Act number 84 of 1982. What you are saying, Deputy Minister? Yeah. Members, are there any questions besides this? I'm allowing the CFO to respond. You? One other issues? Yeah. Oh, all right. Continue. Honourable, can that be order?
Can you protect us,
Honourable members, can there be order? I don't know you to be what I'm hearing right now. I know you we are one family, and we are here on a common purpose, all of us. We are here on service delivery. Can we please allow the DG to continue? Right. Over to you, DG.
Chairperson, on the issue of the honourable members on private land, land has been surveyed by the Chief Surveyor General, so that should not be a problem going forward. Obviously, the Chief Surveyor General reports to rural development, but we're paying attention to that. Maybe it will be helpful, like I've said before, that the Chief Surveyor General is invited here to present so that you verify also this information of whether land has been surveyed or not. But land has been surveyed, unsurveyed land has been surveyed by the Chief Surveyor General. And he's going to hand over that information to Public Works. Okay, the turnaround gains about the acting minister has spoken to that. Weak SCM, the weak supply chain management, which leads to lack of compliance and et cetera. The question that was raised around Chairperson, maybe what we need to do, we have there's a project plan in my office which actually details what we are doing now to stabilize SCM with one secondment from one of our entities. And maybe that document, I can email it to the committee so that they can actually monitor through that project plan. It's very detailed. It gives very clear deliverables. It has done all the gaps that we have found in SEM, just to show that we are addressing this matter. But because this is an audit of a previous year, it's acknowledged that our SEM capability has compromised the department a lot. The issue of Cape Town, Pretoria, and Durban, I think it was related to prestige. What I can disclose to honorable members is that the SIU has completed the report. They have given me the report and the minister, and they are making made recommendations that we charge people. It's a straightforward recommendation. Charge them for violation of SCM protocols. If the question was around issues of prestige. To employ people into unfunded and not approved posts, Chairperson, amounts to misconduct. Now, we were waiting, as you know, the AG just completed the audit in September. These are issues that we're waiting for to be confirmed by the AG, because what is the problem with filling unfunded and unapproved posts is that now we have a huge salary bill. We need to fill professional posts. We can't now. We must declare that as turnaround and go and ask Treasury to give us money specifically, because if we do not declare it as a turnaround project, the Treasury won't listen to Public Works. But because of this unfunded and it has created a huge problem for the department. We are sitting at, for example, on the second quarter. What is that? What's the figure? Yeah.
actually it's above the national treasury threshold. The second quarter figure, we'll see it when we present the second quarterly report. So it's a serious matter, because it's not clear what informed the filling of these posts that are unfunded and unapproved, but we'll follow that up now that we have the AG's report. Minister alluded to the fact that the directors and chief directors were invited where they were taken through the AG's report for the day, and then they were made to make recommendations in terms of what must the department do to deal with those issues raised by the AG.
Honorable Sithole, on Obaba Maguvane, Obaba Gela, can we give the DG a hearing, please? Yeah, Obaba.
On the issue of the 650 projects, the rollover. There's also, though, although there's no proper planning and for projects, and also the fact that we never used the tool that we had, the infrastructure development improvement tool. But one of the issues that must also recognize that as an infrastructure department, infrastructure projects, they tend to roll over to the following year by nature of the project, but also remember that we get funded from Treasury using the MTF framework, but I think it will be important that detail of those projects in terms of their status be made available to the committee. Maybe if the secretariat can remind the department chairperson through you to actually do that. The vacancy rate is also caught up in this situation. We have a huge salary bill. We have a vacancy rate. We don't have money to fill the vacancies. So I don't know if I'm making sense. So we're caught in a vicious cycle that we're addressing now. But one of the things that still has to be attended to by the minister is looking classification of all contract posts and all non-core contract posts for the minister to decide whether they be renewed or we just terminate them, and only leave contract posts under professional services like the Young Professionals Program, where you have architects, young people who are engineers who are part of that program. The Cuban thing, Minister did speak to it, but also on the Cuban program, it's important that the department acknowledged, or if they haven't, I'm acknowledging now, before. When the Cubans came here, one of the key issues that should have been in place was the skills transfer framework. And in terms of the report that I have seen, that transfer was minimal, if any. Now you need to get your house in order. It's not about questioning the value add of the Cubans, but it's making sure that the ground is well prepared when they land here again. We need them. We need them like yesterday. But we have also not been able, as a department, since this program started, to ensure that there's proper skills transfer. The issue of grade one and accessibility program and what is alluded to in the report, I'll ask the acting COO to respond to that, and also the issue of the energy efficiency program. But we are working with the other stakeholders to ensure that there's the energy efficiency, at least in government buildings. But our program should not necessarily be confused with a program driven by ESCOM as a parastatal charge with energy. So we will respond with what we are doing as a department. But we recognize that ESCOM is one of our stakeholders. The training of learners, there was a question about the training of learners. The training of learners is also affected by also budget availability. You would appreciate that we can only spend what we have, because we don't want to come here and account again why we spent money that we didn't have around training. But the training program is being scaled down now to focus on key strategic needs. For example, you can't run public works without sending people for training on SEM, training on strategic planning. Strategic planning is a specialized area. It's not the kind of language that everybody understands. So you need to be able to grasp that and undergo at least some training as a manager. Finance for non-financial managers, given the challenges of the audit and the financial management capability of the department across the regions. So it needs, if I were to just mention a few areas that need our attention. The clients' complaints, we are mindful of those complaints, and that is why we, with the guidance of the minister, we have decided at least to establish joint teams. Because what was happening also was the issue of communication. We find that public health officials are not communicating clearly to the client. Because also of the distinctive roles that each unit is playing, you find that key account management, maybe at head office, does not communicate with on an ongoing basis with key accounts in the region. But that's one part of the problem that we've picked up. You find that the project managers who are responsible for these projects are not feeding on a continuous basis information to key account managers to be able to update the client on an ongoing basis on the status of their requirements, be it accommodation or be it a construction project. But the joint teams that the minister has demanded from us, we hope that they will go a long way to actually deal with this matter. The rehabilitation program, Chairperson and honorable members, we don't want to be in these private leases. We have acknowledged that they are a problem. It's a pity that you have not seen the detailed analysis of what has gone wrong with our leases. I'm talking about the SIU reports. If you were to see those reports, they really reveal that we really have to ensure that we get away out of this. We have to get out of these private leases. The challenge is state-owned buildings are in a bad state, and the fiscal cannot afford to wake up tomorrow and rehabilitate all these state buildings. It's a chicken and egg situation where you've taken a policy stance, but the fiscal cannot afford this. So we're doing it in a phased approach where we think we can do it, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. I would want it to happen tomorrow, but it's really difficult because when you look at those reports and what the SIU investigators have discovered, what we do to manipulate the entire process, supply chain process, it's painful to read. But again, you're caught up that you get a request tomorrow, a particular department requires a building. Then in terms of property ownership in the country, it's skewed, it's protected by the Constitution. If government does not invest more money in the rehabilitation of government buildings, we're always going to find ourselves with this tension of wanting to expand the rehabilitation program, but also unable to do so at a quick rate. Chairperson, I think the COO can answer the other questions.
Over to you, COO.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll start with the questions that were allocated to me by the DG. With respect to the issues raised around the reduction of electricity consumption, the Energy Efficiency Program, the Energy Efficiency Program of Public Workers currently is constituted, is located in the capital budget. So the question was raised around what happens when something needs to be maintained. So the Energy Efficiency Program is not deriving money from the maintenance budget. So that's the first explanation why you would see that when people come and replace, they're replacing not using energy efficient stuff because they're operating from a different budget location. The second big problem why that is the case that we have this current situation is that there's a lack of an asset management framework for public work and government at large. In essence, that informs us to say, do we understand firstly what the condition assessment is of our buildings? What?
No, that's not what I said. You were talking about their report. You didn't spend on their report. I was making an example about it. But I'm talking about their report where you understand on energy saving on capital budget.
Thanks, Honourable Member. The answer for that, which will also be the answer that addresses the issue around accessibility program, is that firstly, Public Works has not been using the Infrastructure Delivery Improvement Program. And I think that's the first part that needs to be acknowledged. That is the root cause of why under expenditure is actually occurring in the programs. But what underpins that particular lack of implementation of ITIP also is the lack of the use of asset management plans. Firstly, their development and their approval and then being used by National Treasury as a basis of approving budgets, which inform when Treasury says, I'm allocating money for you to implement a project. So in essence, what you're getting, FESECO would come up in FESECO as a department and say to National Treasury and put in the current situation, I need X amount of money, I want to implement this project. And Treasury would allocate that money if there's a need for that. But what Treasury is not asking, one, is this part of your asset management plan that you are supposed to produce? Because if it is part of your asset management plan would incorporate the requirements of IDIP that says here are the planning processes you need to undertake so that all the required plannings for the project are undertaken accordingly. To an extent that you take care of all the pre-planning requirements that are required to be done before a project actually hits the ground. You cannot allocate money for a project at the beginning of a financial year and expect that by the end of that financial year it would have been implemented and completed. There are certain requirements you need to go through as feasibility studies before even, as part of post-feasibility studies, even commissioning specifications for that work that needs to be done by consultants that go before you actually go on site. All of those things require time, which is why you are experiencing the problem of under-expenditure. I hope I've explained it in a manner that is understandable, but it's a systematic problem that needs to be sorted out. In the NCHEC process that we've been engaging with Treasury over the past 2 weeks with our major clients and also the provincial public works and provincial treasuries, we have raised the issue of saying we want a commitment from National Treasury to say going forward, they will not accept requests for funding for any infrastructure projects from client departments without submission of asset management plans. Well, that's the only way you enforce the act that is known as KIAMA, and that's the only way you will allow us to be able to plan properly for projects so they're implemented on time. There was another request from the DG for me to answer a question. I don't know if I should go back to it, Chair. I'll need your guidance. It was related to the question around KwaNxamalala. The question, the way I understood it, was speaking to was there any transfers by the department to KwaNxamalala. The response I have for you, say, is that the only transfers that we could ever have for KwaNxamalala would be transfers that relate to municipal rates and taxes if there are state accommodation or assets in KwaNxamalala relating to any of the national departments that could be subs if there are police stations there, if there are defense bases there, if there are correctional facilities there, etc., or home affairs there. Yeah. Those would be the transfers we would make. Yeah. Yeah. Chair, as I was saying...
can please give him a hearing. But... should he not continue?
Yes.
DG, my understanding was that the matter was closed. So you are, DG, you are reopening it, Mama. Can we proceed on other issues?
The process that are driven by the ITC, there's a schedule of them that you can make available if we're talking about the same thing. There's a schedule of projects that have been undertaken by the IDT. I don't know whether it's at KwaNxamalala village, but I know that I can't remember very well, so I don't want to contradict myself. But there are projects that the IDT has carried out in that area. I don't know the distinction between KwaNxamalala and Kaya, but...
That's my problem, DG. DG, that's my problem. Yeah, because Honorable Stolen, it's now confusing us. We know that the place it's called whatever. Let us not change because we are getting confused. We are saying, but you are coming with another terminology and you are confusing us. So if it's about IDT, I will allow the COO to respond to, because you touched on the IDT we were just told.
When I was talking about the IDT capital in other committee, talking about the unfinished infrastructure at Gaza by IDT, they know, because I speak to them about that. Even the toilet that have been built by them are not suitable for the human being.
I know the case, that toilet case, because I was invited to a meeting. Can we allow him to go and recheck on the issue and not allow him just to respond now? Because it's a serious case that was discussed in your portfolio committee. I was also invited to your portfolio committee, so it won't be proper for him just to respond here. Let's give him chance, uzophendula, but not today, because it's a complicated case. I know that case. CEO, please don't touch it on it, my brother.
I've moved on, Chair. Honourable Member, I'm answering another question that has not been answered.
Okay.
All right. There was a question raised with respect to the issues of ownership, that state facilities, who's accounting for them with respect to the three spheres of government. That's at the heart of the issue of vesting. That issue was raised in the recent MINMEC, which was recently held, and there was a resolution to the effect that there should be a special MINMEC that should be hosted to deal with the issues, with particular reference to the issue of ownership between three spheres of government and who owns what, so that people can take accountability. Mm-hmm. The current accountability arrangements are not equitable for all the custodians of state assets. It leaves a situation where I can, as a provincial or local government, knowing fully well that a facility is a local facility or provincial facility that should be in my asset register, and I can still confidently say that my asset register is complete and therefore it's not my responsibility in public works. That is a result of the accountability arrangements as they currently exist with the Office of the Accountant General. That is a subject matter of a special MINMEC so that it can be resolved, but it is intrinsically linked to the payments of rates and taxes. So it's a problem of saying that people can disown properties which they know they should be saying is their properties, and then it places an onerous obligation only on public works to take final accountability. In fact, to that effect, the current process that we are following of enhancing the immovable asset register has revealed that the national government through public works is ahead of all the other spheres of government in terms of vesting properties. And that is a consequence of the unequitable accountability arrangements, because there is no incentive that drives either the provincial sphere or the local government sphere to drive vesting, because nothing is forcing them to do so. I think that is the answer I can give at this point in time, and give the special MINMEC to find a resolution on the issue. I think I've answered the unanswered questions, unless there are specific questions that have been omitted. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. CFO?
The issue regarding the transfer of the money to Argument SA is that only was classified as unauthorized expenditure because of them not being able to establish as an entity. Although the department been transferred to the Argument SA for many years, I think more than a decade since that was a public work. But it's just like now the AGs are much more strictly in terms of their definition of unauthorized and all those type of definition, because We did transfer all these monies to her, but now it has been classified as unauthorized. So we are finding ways of mean about to say how can we accommodate, even as an interim solution, be able to deal with the issue about this transfer, because they are dependent on our funding for their existence. But at the same time, as long as there's no legislation, then that will be still classified as unauthorized. The issue about the funding for the departments go forward when it comes to the compensation employee, like it was alluded by the acting DG, in the sense that we can't in a situation now is that we don't have a funding to really recruit the professional we need because of the overstretching compensation employee. At the same time, the request we made to the National Treasury for us to be able to classify the capital budget in order to cater for the compensation employee, we are still awaiting for the response. At the same time, the department is already 6 months down into the new financial year, and whereas we only got the AG report last month, which is September. So now is AG is coming to do the intern audit, but however, this department is 6 months down in current financial year. So that's the situation we find ourselves in. In terms of supply chain management, the issue about the departments not using the quotation because our database is not adequate enough to give the services we need, we already identified that as a priority area in our turnaround when it comes to the supply chain management project plan. By the way, DG mentioned that we can make that information available because we do put a time frame about how things should be done. And in terms of having come up with a relevant database so that we can source goods and services appropriately is one of our top priority areas which we wanted to put in place.
CSO, can I take you back on the on Agrima South Africa? The budget of Agrima South Africa, is it not from goods and services?
Yes.
And it's transferred to CSIR. And then they get their budget from CS. Is it what the AG is querying to say that unauthorized?
Yeah, now AG classified that one as unauthorized. But like we say, we've been transferred to them all these years. And then and every year, that's something which members may need to know. Every year when the AG is doing the audit, they have a definition about which one is unauthorized, which one is irregular. And that definition changes from year to year. So even we do the same thing every year for the last 10 decades, before may not be unauthorized, but now it's classified as unauthorized. So the requirement has become much more rigid as the time goes by. So we are not there to defend the department to say that the financial position is making worse, but at the same time, when it comes to the AG's audit, their definition becomes rigid, much more rigid as the time goes by. For example, that issue about the energy saving where we transfer it into the ICT. We did that before with ICT, but now you find the AG definition that no, that the ICT is supposed to be other entity, we're supposed to open tender with them, you can't just transfer money to them. And where is ICT as well, we concerned, it is one of our entities. Within the family, why do we have to go and open tender for compete with other service providers? So that's why to say that some of those unauthorized expenditure, the relationship with the ITT, the relationship about this transfer to energy saving funding, it is because the AG right now has a different perspective about those type of transfers. COO?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, if I can just simplify the matter. To take on the point from what the CFO is saying, it goes back to the problem of SEM. Because if you're going to pay from goods and services, or you're going to derive a service, whether it's from a public entity or whether it's a private entity, you need to have a governing document, either a contract or a memorandum of agreement that sets out deliverables, that says you will be paid in accordance with the delivery of 1, 2, and 3 in this particular aspect. And that is the issue that I think at the end of the day we need to deal with when it comes to this. whether the final outcome of what happens to Agrima South Africa, whether it's located in CIDP or in whatever format, the issue the AG is raising is that if you're deriving a service outcome from somebody, you must have a delivery schedule or a governing document that actually informs you why you're paying such monies for that particular service. Because what we've been doing, we've just been transferring money wholesale without saying what for. And I think that's at the heart of the problem we need to sort out. It's been a product of historical practice that needs to be sorted. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. All members, are there any follow-ups? Maya Mavila?
Chair, the follow-up, because I'm getting a little bit confused, although I know about this matter. The CSIR is not accounting to us. It's accounting to Science and Technology. So what happens with regards to the accountability? Because if you transfer the money for Agrima South Africa from the Department of Public Works to CSIR, who's accounting to who? Then CSIR must give the money, must also transfer the money, in other words, to Agrima South Africa.
Before responding, is CSIR not a manager of sort of Agrima South Africa to manage their finances? I'm raising this so that the CEO, when he responds, he also take me on board, because I thought in the past you said CIR is acting as a manager, and then they transfer money to Agrima South Africa.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, Agrima South Africa is reports to the Minister of Public Works. The executive authority is the Minister of Public Works. It is this location that's within the CSIR as a consequence of the material conditions of CSIR that enable Agrima to do its work. And there's been an arrangement between the two entities. When I say entities, I mean CSIR and also DPW in terms of how they transfer money in for the purposes of Agrima to deliver its services. So I hope I've answered the question of accountability. The accountability is clear. The executive authority is the Minister of Public Works. The accounting authority is the board of Agrima South Africa. The issue at hand is that even let's assume there was no Agrima South Africa for hypothetical, and we require the same services that Agrima South Africa is providing from CSIR as an independent entity, not reporting Minister of Public Works. For, let's say we were given a responsibility to say the thing that Agrima is doing, Public Works must do, and there's no Agrima. And we say we don't have the capacity to do so. We would then approach an entity that has that capability. CSIR is like a consulting agency that does science and industrial research, which is similar to what Agrima South Africa does. So in that situation, we would still have to answer the question that the AG is asking us. If you want a particular service, whether it's from a public entity or a private entity, you have to have a controlling document that governs your relationship with the two and explains why you are paying particular monies. Whether you call it a transfer or payment, but you must know what you're paying for so that it is auditable and held accountable for. What they are raising as a problem is that we're transferring money as if to an entity without knowing what it is delivering to us and what the performance agreements are. Why are we paying for the particular monies? I hope I've made the situation clear, Chair.
Okay. Very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any follow-ups?
No.
No.
It's
one of God. Honorable Gayla.
No, the teacher is going to take me away. I got no transport. Since I got no transport. The CIDP amendment bill, what's happening? CIDP, the amendment to the CIDP. Long outstanding, and it's affecting the construction industry.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Honourable members, we have come to the end of our meeting. Next week we are going to meet entities. We were going to meet entities on Tuesday, all the four of them. But we have been requested to move the Agrima and the IDT to Wednesday because there's going to be a joint sitting. So we'll meet next week, Tuesday and Wednesday. It's beyond our control. There's nothing that we can do. We thought we'll deal with the issues once and for all. DG, thank you very much for coming and for the responses, though some are outstanding. Baba, stall. Where are Kuluma Mama now? Honorable members, thank you very much for participating. And thank you very much. It was a very long, hectic process. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the evening and take care. Thank you.